it won't be long before we'll all be there with snow.
Snow, snow. I want to wash my hands, my face and hair with snow.
She wants to wash her face and hands with snow. That's how much that lady loves snow, snow. Wendy.
Good for the complexion.
That's what they say.
Because it's cold.
You can use a moisturizer. We recommend that you do, but nothing's better for your complexion than a big handful of snow.
My son Dylan, who will be 14 tomorrow, came in. We were watching Jesus Christ Superstar because my older son Michael's trying out for the play today. Mm. Dylan comes in, sits on the couch, and he has a paper plate, and he's eating something. I said, "What are you eating?" He went and got a handful of snow.
Oh, boy.
And was eating snow.
Not as nutritious as some meals, but it sure puts you in the holiday spirit, doesn't it? A big plate of snow.
I said, "Let me look for some grenadine. We'll make some shave ice."
Yeah. Yeah.
That could have worked.
Then you got a meal. All right. Tell me if I should be mad at the neighbor kids for this or not. When shoveling the driveway, I make it a point of making things look nice and even. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I make nice piles and stuff like that. And it really,
I'm a little anal about that. Are you too, kind
it's
of?
It's ridiculous when you stop and think about it because it's going to snow 100 more times this winter. But I'm very careful. Like
straight borders.
Yeah, very much so. And then the neighbor kids came and they sledded down. We live on a little bit of a hill, not much of a hill, but enough to you could get some traction if you were sledding, and just made it look a mess. And even my wife went out and said, "Hey, guys, you also have yards," because they do. They live down the block and they each have a yard. "Could you do this in your yard?" And they don't have a hill like we do. So they didn't.
Well, that was their answer, right?
Yeah. They just stared at my wife like she was speaking a foreign language. "No, you have a hill. Why would we go to our yards? There's no hill."
I would have been
shot at them.
I would have been mad, but I bet they were in shock that somebody said something about it.
Well, here's the thing. She went out three different times.
To yell at them?
To just say, "What are you doing? You each have a yard. Go to your yards and do this." And on the third one, they said something. Now, they're about six or seven. So one of them said, "I know, we're packing up." But they didn't have any sledding gear. It was two kids in a sled.
That kid is going to be so successful.
I know,
we're packing up.
But that's the kind of thing a parent says, you know, if they have to be somewhere else.
Right.
All right, let's pack up and get a move on. But we saw through that ploy.
God, that would bug me.
It shouldn't.
Yes, it should. It's your yard. What if there's an injury? Are you responsible then?
Seriously? Part of it is I kept thinking, let's say there was some mishap. And when I say we live on a hill, it's not a treacherous slope. It's not a black diamond run on a ski resort course. But
is it even big enough to put a sled down?
Yeah. I mean, my daughters used to do it when they were little with those saucers.
But they lived there.
Right. That's the difference, is that they lived there. But then I was thinking, boy, if I was a kid, I'd probably have found the house with the hill, and I probably would have done that, too. I didn't tell my wife that because she was 0-for-3 and explaining to the kids that you have to go somewhere else.
I wouldn't have said anything, I have to admit, because it's the Christmas spirit and it's kids, but I would have been steaming in the house. I would have said, "Where's the BB gun?"
I kept hearing laughter, joyous laughter outside, and I don't want to interrupt joyous laughter, you know me. But then once I saw the yard, you couldn't have messed it up more, but then you go, but so what?
It's going to melt.
Right. I know.
And snow more. Did the more snow come and cover up the mess?
No, even this morning I went out and it looks awful.
There were kids, one year I was out shoveling, and we live by a school, and kids were walking to the school, and somebody dropped down in our front yard and did a snow angel.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't say anything, but it bugged me.
Yeah.
Go do a snow angel in your yard.
Right.
I like the look of a nice, neat, manicured lawn. In this case, a nice, neat, manicured snowed lawn.
Right. Isn't that the best?
Yeah, but I didn't say anything.
I was torn. I let my wife do the heavy lifting at the house. You know, there's trouble. You go do it, and I'll stay inside. I was right on the 50-yard line. I get that. Every once in a while, we have neighbors who bring their dogs, and their dogs just kind of use our trees.
Well, that on the parkway?
What do you mean on the parkway?
Is it like from the sidewalk towards the street?
Yeah.
That's not really your property anyway.
It isn't?
No, that's the village's.
Oh, you sure?
Yeah. You have to cut it.
Yeah.
They're not going to come and mow it, but if something's wrong with it, if the tree needs to be cut down or something,
that's officially
they
their
handle
land.
It.
All right.
And I mean, dogs lift their legs and go on trees, and who cares? If they leave a little, you know, present and don't pick it up, that's unacceptable.
That's happened a few times, not very often, but a couple of times.
That's when the flaming bag of dog dew comes in handy.
You
find out where they live. Yeah.
Right.
I got a little something, ding dong.
But I'm very respectful of other people's things. Like the last thing in the world, I don't have a dog to go and do that. But if I did, I would just say, we have trees in our yard. Use our trees.
Well, you take the dog for a walk.
Yeah.
And they have to go along the way. I have the coolest little dog bag holder that's right on the leash.
Yeah.
And
that works.
Yeah, I mean, you just take out a bag and do it, but I'm not going to come out with a spray bottle after they pee.
But I'm so, like, if something belongs to somebody,
it's a yard.
I don't want a mess. I know, but I'm more respectful of people's things. I don't want to use anything. I don't want to get in anyone's way.
You are officially turning into a grandpa before you're a grandpa. You know that. Have you always been like this?
What's wrong with, like, respecting other people's things?
Well, we are. We're walking a dog. If a dog pees on your tree or your flowers in the front.
All right, but I don't have a dog. What if I brought my kid? What if I just let my kid relieve themselves on somebody's
That's
lawn?
That's illegal.
I know.
Dogs
I know.
Doing it is not illegal. If you had your a kangaroo and they went on our lawn, what do
then
I care?
Then there'd be a problem, yeah.
If you left a little kangaroo package, that would bug me.
Yep. All right, a break. Not that kind of break. Just us taking a quick break and then more show. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 gets that done. It is holiday season right now.
I can tell by your story. Get off my lawn and put plant in my snow.
You jamokes. I refer to them as jamokes, Wendy.
They're kids.
I'm sorry for being a Scrooge, but I'm practicing. All right, so my neighbor kids have decided we live on a little bit of a hill. It's a slight hill, but you could get a sled up at the top and sled down the hill if you wanted to, and I'm too old to. But my neighbor kids have decided that's the best place in town to sled, so they messed up my snow. Is this acceptable? 312-981-7200.
I don't know if it's acceptable, but I don't know. Especially the holiday season, I don't know if I would have said anything, but I would have been steaming inside.
Yeah.
Eric, what do you think?
Well, I was telling the
Kevin
person that answered the phone, right, that when I was at the store, I come home, and I don't notice these kids at first, but I go bring my groceries in, and I sit down at my table, and I look out. There's four or five kids out on the public area, but it's right bordering my house, my property. They're digging a hole.
Oh.
And I mean, with regular shovels and, you know, these kids are probably at least they're over five or six. So I go out there and ask them what they're doing. They're looking for treasure.
Cuter in their yard.
They're going right through the grass. They're going right through. We got public area that I have to pay for
to
keep groomed. And they're going right. And I mean, they got a hole about 5 or 6 feet wide and about a foot deep. They got all the sod out. I said, put it back together and go to your own house and do it. But what I was thinking is, where are these guys' parents?
Right.
I don't want to be an old man, get off my property guy, but that's what you got to do sometimes. You do.
I agree with you.
I'm kind of mean to my kids in that respect. Like, if I see them on someone else's lawn, I will, guys, come on. Because I'm worried about what the neighbors think. That's what I think I am. I don't want to piss off the neighbors. Who will get my mail when I'm on vacation?
Did they find a buried treasure, Eric? I'm curious. Oh, he's gone. Because if you get a pirate map and it says there's some buried treasure on Eric's property, you have to follow through.
You got to ask permission.
Yeah, I guess.
And then he gets, what, 40%?
I think it's
40%. Of the treasure?
Yes.
Ed, what do you think?
Well, I've lived in this house for just 50 years now. We moved in December 1st of 1966.
Oh, you had an anniversary there. Congratulations.
Yeah, I had four kids, and the first time we had a snowstorm, I mean, we were just new to the neighborhood. I look out, and there's five or six kids sliding on the hill, and mine are still in the house. So I send them out, and they all join in, and they bonded with all those kids. My youngest child now is 52 years old. He hasn't slid on this hill in ages, but I look outside, you know, today, tonight, after school, I'll be looking out there, and there'll be kids sliding on my hill, and I'll have the biggest smile in the world because I think it's great.
All right.
You are a way better person than
where
we
are. Where is your hill, by the way? Because I'm going to send my neighbor kids to your house.
Well, the interesting thing is my neighbor lives, you know, right next to me, and his hill is pretty much the same as mine. And the house south of me is pretty much, but the kids through their civil engineering skills or whatever have determined that my hill is the best hill. So my neighbor's kids have always slid on my hill.
Yeah.
They don't slide on their own.
No, why would you slide on your own if yours is so much better?
Ours is better.
So I guess.
There's a ditch down at the bottom so the kids can't go out into the road. And I keep an eye on that to make sure they don't come and bring water or something to pour it so they can go across the road. But because they go down and they just naturally stop in the ditch and they come back up again. To me, that's winter. That's what grass is for.
I guess
kids to have fun on.
And yeah, at a public park or something. Don't drag your sleds down the block.
I'm not a fanatic about my lawn.
No,
decent lawn and all of that. But they don't in the winter. They're not hurting my grass, but they're sure making me smile.
Well, that's worth it, Ed. You're a better human than we are. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
The thing is this. If the kids said, if they knocked on the door and they asked permission and said, we have our sled and you have a great hill and it would mean a lot to us if we could sled down your hill, that would be one thing. I'd still say no.
You couldn't say no.
Well, you know what happens? We have a basketball backboard, you know?
Yeah.
And neighbor kids come and use that.
Okay, that they should. That's on your driveway. That's private property. What happened when you were a kid? You'd be like, get off my property. Why don't you do that now?
I should pull that out now, except once you hit a certain age, you sound tyrannical if you say something like that. Like when you're another kid, you could do that. You could say that all day long. But once you become an adult, it's like, ugh, that guy.
So save it for the radio?
Yes.
Can I just ask, Bertrand, what are you doing down here? It's not like you're distracting at all. He comes down, and I'm assuming, the Wintrust Business Lunch is next. I'm like, boy, this show went fast. And then he's walking around. He's squinting his eyes, looking behind me.
If I'm walking behind you, how do you know if I'm squinting my eyes?
Because you were in front of me squinting your eyes out the window. I'm like, that's not too distracting. Then he comes and goes in the drawer right here. What are you
it's
looking
a drawer.
For?
Is it only your drawer? It's
no,
other
we're,
people's
we're
drawer.
Doing a show. I know you can't tell.
You're fine.
I wasn't
you're
really
fine.
Listening. You guys, look, I've had a rough morning, okay?
What's wrong? Do we get you down here for news?
Yeah, because my computer is sort of fried.
Frozen up.
So I don't have my legs under me. It's a little difficult. I'm a little sensitive right now, and I don't need you to pick on me because my morning's not going very well.
Wow, he can pick on others, but I can't pick on him back.
No, I know. You're fine. You're fine.
I needed to change the story, so I was looking for a pen, and there wasn't one in the pen drawer, so I took Bill's.
Right.
I returned it.
That didn't distract you at all?
No, Steve is like a ninja. I don't even see him.
How can you not see him? He's 8 feet tall.
Oh, you should go up in the newsroom. They have parties up there while you're trying to.
Is that what's going on?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
No.
Well, do you need that computer or do you have one over there?
Now that I've got my pen, I'm happy here.
All right. Well, we are glad to have you.
I didn't mean to distract you.
You didn't really. It just, you know, just a tiny bit. Get off my lawn, will you?
That's what it comes to.
A little slack today. A little slack.
All right.
I forgot what I was going to say, but we'd like you to be down here every day.
Oh, yeah.
As you can hear from Wendy's
rant. Welcome.
No, if we know, it's just you didn't see him walking around?
No, I don't. I can separate.
I love your sweater, Bill.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. He's very Christmassy.
I make my own
on
clothing.
On the outside.
We'll take a quick break. Steve's doing news from a special secret location. Find out where it is next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Bill, I asked you how many times you shoveled. You said twice. I like to keep up with it.
Yeah.
So I did it 3 times.
Uh-huh.
Jim was very conveniently out of town again.
Right.
And there were, 13,000 flights canceled yesterday. There were so many flights.
Uh-huh.
He made it out on Saturday right before the storm. I think he left at like 10 a.m., so he missed it.
Oh, good.
And then coming, he went to see the world premiere of Rogue One, the red carpet premiere in L.A. And then coming home, he was just doing a quick turnaround and a 2.5-hour delay on the plane.
Mm.
and just sat there.
Mm-hmm.
That would drive me insane. Sure. I know there's nothing you can do, but just so lucky to have been able to travel with 13,000 flights being canceled.
In Chicago, we're 1,300 or 1,200, I think.
Oh, 100. Yeah, I'm right. Sorry.
That's okay.
I did exaggerate that completely. But are they still, like, catching up now for all the people? What happens when...
Well, I think there were, like, 60 canceled today at O'Hare, a couple more than 60.
But it always takes a few days to catch up once you cancel that many.
Yeah, but, I mean, I think, that, you know, 60 flights canceled out of a few hundred, that's, you know, it's pretty good.
I do not like to fly when it's snowing so much. I know the plows were out at O'Hare and everything was fine and really not a problem with anything, mm-hmm. but very scary.
Let's take a quick listen to some Donald Trump audio. He spoke with Chris Wallace of Fox News, and he says something that I think is one of the more interesting things he has said in the past year. Now, he has said many, many, many interesting things, some good interesting, some not so good interesting. But listen to the wording on this as Chris Wallace talks to him about the fact that he will not be briefed every day on intelligence. Normally, that's a morning meeting, and it happens every day. But he maintains that once a week is fine, and his reason for this is very interesting. Let's listen to this audio. This is Donald Trump, President-elect Donald Trump, with Chris Wallace over the weekend on Fox News. Listen.
We're having Steve Bertrand's computer problems down here now. That's the thing that happens.
Is it not loading up, Kevin?
When computers go down, here we go.
Oh, here it is.
I just want to ask you about your skepticism about the intelligence community. You are getting the presidential daily brief
yes.
only once a week.
Well, I get it when I need it.
But is there skepticism?
First of all, these are very good people that are giving me the briefings. And I say, if something should change from this point, immediately call me. I'm available on 1 minute's notice. I don't have to be told, you know, I'm like a smart person. I don't have to be told the same thing and the same words every single day.
Let's stop it right there. Wouldn't anybody else say, I'm a smart person. I don't need this every day. I'm an intelligent guy. But he said, I'm like a smart person. And I know that's subtle, but doesn't that say a lot?
Yeah, but that doesn't make any difference whether or not you're smart. You need to know what's going on.
So on a that's daily basis.
Like smart or smart, I don't care what he said. It's a stupid answer.
What is he doing with that time? What does he think is a more important
tweeting.
Spend? Is what it is?
Yeah.
Last thing Saturday Night Live.
He's up late
Awful
tweeting.
Episode of SNL again. They got to pull this show off the air. I don't know what's more important. That is a crucial thing. I mean, they've been doing this for decades for a reason. It's a crucial part of the job. You need to know on a daily basis. He says, if something changes, let me know. But there's going to be subtle changes every day.
I get that, but not when you're president of the United States. If you come in and do the same job every day, although
right.
we have a little briefing with Kevin every day.
Yes, we
here's
do.
What's going on. Here's a few pitches.
Yeah.
I just think that, you know, what does it take, a minute? He can't do that?
Right.
Here's what's going on. The situation, blah, 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 is still the same. We're having a little bit of a problem right now with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're telling us what to tell you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so have a good day. Well, I don't understand why he wouldn't want to know that. I get if there's an emergency, he's a minute away. I understand that.
Right.
But at least feign interest in running this country.
This is part of the thing. If you look at the people he keeps plugging into major cabinet positions, much like himself, they have, I wanted to say little experience, but in most of these cases, they have no experience when it comes to government. It's a lot of business people and that sort of thing. And maybe that's going to be fine. But whose job is it at this point to say, Mr. Trump, here's the thing. We've been doing it this way for X amount of years. And the reason we do it is that even though you might not think it's important, we have learned from doing this for so long that it is important that you know on a daily basis who's where and what's what. It's really crucial. I get him coming in going, okay, you did things this way for so long, but now I'm in town. This is the way I run the show. But it just doesn't make sense that you can't. I have no idea how long these meetings go. My guess is they vary depending on what's going on in the country and in the world.
Can't be that long.
It
a daily
can't
briefing.
Be, right.
You know what's going on. Pence will handle that. Mike Pence will handle that.
I thought
someone
about
has
that.
To know.
But wouldn't he have said, we've decided to mix things up a little bit, and that'll be something that Mike Pence takes care of while I'm doing whatever he does.
Why should he say that when he can just say, I don't want
to
do it?
I don't need to know it every day. I'm like a smart person.
I didn't see the like a smart person. I didn't hear that.
Those were his words. And anybody else, when confronted with something like this, Mr. Trump, this is the way every president has done it. You go, look, I'm a smart guy. I understand. I get it. But he didn't say that. He said, I'm like a smart person.
But again, your intelligence has nothing to do with a briefing of what's coming up for that day.
Right.
Because even if you're dumb,
right.
Here's what's going on. And then he can talk to his cabinet and say, what do we do about this?
Right.
So the smart doesn't even have anything to do with it. It's just being aware of what is going on in the country you're running.
Yes.
I think that's important.
Yes. Yes. You know how every day we know we're going to be on for 4 hours, so we look at newspapers and we look online and we look at guest pitches and we say, okay, these are things that are pertinent to the show because they're happening locally, nationally, or internationally. Why can't he, the president, a far, far, far more important job than you and I have, why can't he do the same?
I'm sure he does. I'm sure he reads the papers. I'm sure he, you know, whatever's Twitter, honestly, you can get a lot of news updates on there.
Yeah.
I'm sure he knows what's going on.
But there's got to be inside stuff that the White House is privy to that the media is not privy to. I'm hoping.
And I thought he didn't trust the media.
He does not trust the media.
Well, so he should be getting his info, his intel from someone. Because there is a lot.
Inside sources.
Yeah, there's a lot more going on than I'm reading on the AP news alerts that I get.
Right.
He's on a need-to-know basis.
It just seems like that's part of the job. I've heard other presidents talk about these daily briefings, and it seems like it's crucial. It seems.
Unless there's no change. Unless, you know, it's just status quo.
Right.
But you'd think you'd even want to hear that.
Right.
Nothing, no new developments since our talk yesterday. Have a great day.
Wendy, this is a guy that 3 years ago was sitting in a meeting almost every week deciding whether or not Gary Busey should be fired or not. Shouldn't he find the time for the country?
Yeah, he should.
I would think he should.
But, I mean, nobody's going to change it. It's like he's going to do it his way.
You know how, I don't know if you're like this with meetings, but I would say a good percentage of the meetings that I've had in my lifetime, you go, well, that could have either been shortened or not had at all. And I understand that. But I've never reached anywhere near the level of importance that the president.
Thank God.
I know, thank God.
We would be in big trouble.
Huge trouble.
Either of us. I'm not throwing you under the bus. It's like, and it's funny when I think about it, because it is almost like you in the White House.
Yeah.
Experience-wise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have had the same amount of presidential experience that Donald Trump has had.
Wow.
But I'm not like a smart person. I know that the job's not right for me. I'm the opposite of a smart person.
Right. A smart person wouldn't take that job,
quite
honestly.
If they handed me the job, I would say no thank you. If they said, hey, we've looked at a bunch of things and we think you're the guy to run the... I would go, oh, please.
You could get a ping pong table in the White House.
Then I might do it. Then I might
and a disco
it.
Ball.
Right. If there's those elements, I want in. Let's take a break. I see people want to weigh in on this. We're at 312-981-7200. Stay where you are. We'll get to your calls and texts in just a minute. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It is Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder discussing Donald Trump's comments over the weekend. He was on Fox News with Chris Wallace. Chris Wallace was talking to him about these daily briefings that the president's normally sit through. He said he would not be attending them on a daily basis, that once a week is fine, because as he explained to Chris Wallace, he is like a smart person.
All right. Well, according to a report from the Conservative Government Accountability Institute, the GAI, and this institute was co-founded by Steve Bannon, by the way.
Oh.
Just to let you know.
All right.
The report claimed that President Obama had only attended 42% of his briefings between January 20th, 2009 and September 29th, 2014. Pulling its data from the president's public schedule as reported by WhiteHouse.gov and Politico.
Is this news that came out because people are criticizing Trump for saying that he'd only come to one a week?
I bet.
All right.
I bet
Bannon
that's right.
I would need to see it from another source before I'd believe it.
Yes. I know. I had to search things, a bunch of different stories, because it depends.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm just saying
I
would believe it.
Right, because
Steve Bannon has something of an agenda when it comes to this.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I had to go to different news sites, because it's like you go to some news site, IJR.com, I don't want that. So you have to go to NBC News. But then I found out that Bannon was behind this intelligence agency.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, we were talking about this off the air. If Donald Trump doesn't want to attend all of them, that's fine. But don't make it public. Like, kind of go with the flow.
Right.
Go through the motions.
It does seem a strange thing to say.
I'm not going
to
do it.
I don't need to do it every day. Once a week is fine. And I would love to know where that time is better spent. Like, if he has something that's legit and you go, oh, okay, well, he's doing that. That's a good spending of his time. But what's he doing that's more important than daily briefing meetings?
He has Mike Pence. That's what I think is more important to him. Because he can do what he wants. Oh, I got Mike Pence to, you know, checks and balances. Ray, what do you think about this? Hey, Ray.
A major corporation. And most CEOs will tell you that they have a right to know everything that goes on in their company, but they don't always have a need to know what's going on. The President of the United States, that doesn't count for that. The President needs to know what's going on. He has trusted advisors and stuff like that that can decide what's a priority and everything. But what happens if, you know, this guy doesn't get an important piece of information? You know, like on 9/11, none of the, you know, all that information was out there. These guys were taking flying lessons and everything else. But somebody decided it wasn't a priority, that not everybody needed to know what it was. So, you know, the president needs to be in the loop. You know, maybe he doesn't have to attend the exact briefing, but he should have, like, the vice president, like you, or somebody else that will give him the cliff notes or something like that, you know. Bring him up to speed, but, you know, maybe he doesn't have to attend every one.
Ray, since you brought up his business background, and that's what Trump has been for decades, is a businessman. I guarantee you when he was running his business, he got a daily briefing every day on where things stood with his business. I can promise you he pays attention to detail in that respect. So why would he do that with his businesses and not with the country?
I don't believe that he knew every nut and bolt, and every time somebody, you know, the doorman took the day off and, you know, so-and-so didn't show up for work and, you know, this shipment was delivered late, and, you know.
Sure, so not the minutia, I get that.
Yeah, somebody down the chain, you know, has to make a decision what goes into that daily briefing. And all of that stuff, I feel, in a daily briefing is very important. And why would they bother the president? Why would they take his time to give him minutia or, you know, and stuff like that? And I believe that, you know, Donald Trump as a CEO, he had his kids helping him run the company and everything else. You know, when he would take a vacation or trip, he probably wasn't in on the day-to-day operations of the company.
Right. Agreed.
All right. Well, thank you for your comments.
And to people texting in saying he needs to know about minutia, that's his wife. Wrong. It's Melania. That is a separate person.
According to Huffington Post, Bill, Donald Trump used to complain about President Obama not getting intelligence briefings. And while the classified briefings are not mandatory, presidents usually opt to receive them regularly because they provide important information about national security matters, particularly in areas of conflict.
Right.
So in reality, Obama does receive regular briefings. He sometimes opts for just a written version instead of being at the meeting.
Yeah.
But that's still knowing what's going on.
Yeah.
And we're only taking calls from people named Ray. So, hi, Ray.
Hi. Is that me?
Yeah, that's you.
Yeah, all right. No, I agree with the last Ray, but then you said, you know, when he said he was like a smart person, you know, how the kids always talk, well, I'm like this, or I'm, you know, something like, you know, it doesn't mean he's like that person. That means that's just kind of a word that's in between, don't you think?
So he's not saying I'm similar to a smart person. He's using like you, if you were a sophomore in high school.
I'm guilty of that, too. Sorry. I mean, some people do say that.
Yeah, a lot of people do, and I mean, he doesn't say it all the time, but I think when you hear his actual comment, that's exactly what it sounded like.
Oh, all right.
But I don't think that he has to be. I was going to say, too, that Obama was accused of, he actually accused Obama of not attending the briefings, but anyway, I love your guys' show, so I just disagree with the way you're doing this.
That's fine. Don't worry.
Well, keep listening.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you, Ray.
Love you guys. Take
Thanks,
care.
Thanks, Ray.
Bye.
Paula has texted us, Bill, and it says, I'm not sure who I was listening to yesterday, but a TV commentator was questioning an expert about this. He said it depends on the handler giving the briefing. If Trump is getting repetitive briefings, then the handler isn't doing their job correctly.
That's so important because, yes, right?
Yep.
So then you say to whoever needs to know this, look, I'm not getting out of this what I need to be getting out of this. This is an important part of the day because I'm the president and I need this every day. Let's find somebody to make this work. Don't just skip out on it.
It seems weird, but I think Ted has a great idea. Ted, what do you think?
Well, you could call me Ray if you need to.
Okay, thanks,
go ahead,
Ray.
Ted, a.k.a. Ray.
Here's the thing I was thinking about. I don't like the idea that the president isn't on this stuff either. I didn't like it when Obama was doing the same thing. But here's the thing. You think you're freaked out now. Wait till you find out that Trump listened to you guys' show today and thought, hey, I could put Gary Busey in charge of this and he can report to me.
We don't want that. Nobody wants that.
Gary Busey's in charge of the briefings.
Very frightening.
Yeah, it is a little bit.
Have a great
Thanks,
day and
Ted.
Holiday. Thank you.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. News is next. My best friend in the whole wide world, Grant Mulvey, will be stopping in. And Eric Zorn, who's in the top 10 as well. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
People let me tell you about my best friend. He's a warm-hearted person who loved me till the end. People let me tell you about my best friend. He's a one-boy cuddly toy. My up, my down, my pride and joy. People
Wendy, look who's here. My best friend in the whole wide world, Blackhawk great Grant Mulvey. Hi, Grant.
Hello, Bill
nice
and Wendy. How are you?
Hello, Grant. It is nice to see you. Bill's always excited when his best friend in the whole wide world comes up.
Yes, I am.
It was so enjoyable to sit through the game with you the other day, you
we
and your daughter.
Time. Yeah.
And it was just so enjoyable to watch the Blackhawk game with you.
Wasn't that fun?
Yeah, you're so knowledgeable about it. You gave me such insight.
God, you are a good friend.
No, come on. And then Grant and I, as we've done every Christmas, we go Christmas shopping together, and we had a nice time. You should come with us, Wendy. Yeah. Enjoy yourself.
No, I don't want to intrude on your best friendship.
We just have
I'll
a
get
good
my
time.
Own friend.
All right. That's fine. That's fine.
All right.
It was fun, though. Grant was kind enough. Kylie was so impressed. Grant came and sat with us, and we talked hockey and many other things, and thank you for doing that.
Yeah, it was great.
Fun.
Great to meet Kylie, and it's always enjoyable to watch a hockey game with people that are interested, and
mm-hmm.
I get a chance to bring clients to the hockey game, and, mm-hmm. and they may not go to a lot. I had a client the other night at the hockey game Friday night that he had never been to a Blackhawk game. And, I find that hard to believe.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been to every sporting event game. And so I don't think of that. But to have him, he was so excited. And he and I are about the same age. And he had never been to a Blackhawk game.
Well, not everybody gets to go, Not everybody's lucky enough to have a best friend who's a former player from the Chicago
true.
Blackhawks.
That's
or
true.
Holds the record for the most goals in a single period.
Single game. Five goals in a game.
In a game, yeah.
Yep. Kylie is attending school in New York, and she has a lot of Blackhawk paraphernalia, and she said that on an almost daily basis, if she's got a book bag or whatever she has with the Blackhawks logo, somebody stops her and says, hey, that's my team, too. It's happening more and more.
Isn't it amazing? My grandchildren, I have a 4-year-old grandson and twin boys that are 2 years old, and they wear Blackhawk stuff. They wear Cubs stuff,
mm-hmm.
And their mother will wear Illinois. She mm-hmm. she graduated from Illinois, and so they'll be wearing Blackhawk stuff. And people will stop them and say, "I know that Blackhawk team,"
you know.
And it's so great. And now with the Cubs, mm-hmm. it's just so great.
And the Sox
happening.
Will be back.
And the Sox will be back. Yeah,
they're doing
rebuilding.
A lot of, yes.
They made, unfortunately, we had to give up a great player to get back and rebuild. The White Sox used to always have a really fantastic minor league system, and a lot of players came through their minor league system, and now they've built, I think there was 4 guys that Chris Sale was traded for, and one is supposed to be the best player not in Major League Baseball, so let's hope that he comes and plays real well for the White Sox.
And this just in, Chris Sale just got a job at Joann Fabric. He's going to be cutting fabric for people.
That's
so
a great job.
Perfect.
For him.
That's just off season.
That works out nicely.
Yeah.
Grant, you're going to be playing in one of these alumni games. You're going to be back on the ice. Are you excited? I bet you are. You have to be, right?
Well, it's going to be fantastic. First of all, I'm a big baseball fan, as you well know, yeah. and I love going to Busch Stadium in St. Louis. The St. Louis Cardinals it's just a great stadium, and it overlooks the arch. It overlooks kind of the city,
yeah.
And inside you can see all these big buildings in the arch, and outside they have the baseball village, and it's really exciting. And I couldn't be more excited to go down and represent the Blackhawks, mm-hmm. and play in the alumni game. Now we've got our work cut out for us.
I think you do. There's some pretty stiff competition, isn't there?
Well,
stiff because they're on the alumni, yeah, or
no,
what?
They're not just flexible.
They're just, oh. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's
that would be me.
No, stop it.
How yeah. often do you skate?
We skated on Friday afternoon, and we skate for an hour and a half on Fridays. And I usually try to get out one other time. And especially now with the game, I'll get out four or five times before the game. And we have a pretty energetic skate on Friday afternoon, our alumni. And it works out great because nobody bumps and there's no body checking. There's
when you're warming up, but during the game, will everybody go easy?
Hopefully. All right. It better be an accident than if anybody runs into me, because I don't even wear pads inside my pants.
Oh,
my pants are.
That's funny. Bill does all the time. He doesn't even play hockey.
Now. I have them on.
He wears
now.
His shorts on.
Yeah.
He's got pads. He's got like football pads
right.
on.
It just feels good. I can't explain it, Grant. It just feels so good. I don't know.
Compact.
Yeah. So we have no hitting, no body checking.
Does Reggie Fleming know this? Because he looks like a guy that might take a shot.
Yeah, Reggie Fleming, he did skate with us years ago. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us. But we have a good group that skates. And our group, compared to the St. Louis team has 7 Hall of Famers. Now, you know, I've not even walked by the Hall of Fame, alone being inducted into the Hall of Fame. And they have 7 of them. And Wayne Gretzky, Brett Hall, Chris Pronger, Martin Brodeur, they're all playing in this game. And I know we're going to win,
yeah.
because we have a younger squad. We have Ben Eager, Burrish, and Sopel, and Carcillo. We've got
those
some
guys all played recently.
Just recently, yeah.
Wow.
So it's really nice, and we'll have a good representation.
You mentioned Wayne Gretzky, and he's called the Great One for a reason. That guy could do everything on ice. He was just flawless as a player. When you're playing a guy like that, even though you're a professional yourself, do you just go, there's professional, and then there's a guy like Gretzky? Is it that big of a difference?
Well, the Blackhawks could have played one of the very first games Wayne Gretzky played in the National Hockey League. And one of my boyhood pals I grew up with and played hockey with, he was on the Edmonton Oilers at that time. And so we didn't talk very much in the warm up, but you know, I Don Ashby was a great dear friend of mine, and I said, Asher, is he as good as he really is supposed to be? And we had not seen game one yet. And Don Ashby said, he's better.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so the excitement to watch Wayne Gretzky, the excitement to play against Wayne Gretzky was to watch Wayne Gretzky.
Yeah.
He did things that were just, you know, fantastic. He did things that were great.
Yeah.
And that's why he's called the Great One. And one of the greatest things he ever did was we were playing in a playoff game, and I met him, and I said, you know, Wayne, I have a son who will not, I'll be out of the NHL by the time you get to be a superstar.
Yeah.
And I would love to have something from you. And I never mentioned his name. I never mentioned anything about his age. And the next day in my dressing, in my stall, was a Wayne Gretzky autographed stick, picture, all to Kyle, my son, and
so
it was
nice.
Just fantastic.
So he did his homework on his own.
Yeah, and he's he's the greatest. He is. I've had a chance to be with him many times, and he is just the most. He's so humble, and he's fantastic.
That's perfect.
How many 22s are playing? Because Jamal Mayers is a number 22. You're the first 22. Are there more 22s that
are playing? No, I think it's just Jamal this year and myself. Last year, I had a friend in Minnesota. We played in the Minnesota game in the Winter Classic that the Blackhawks played in. And there was three 22s.
Yes.
And I had a friend of mine from St. Paul that was there with his son. And Jamal got out there first. And, he was flying around And my friend's son, who was 8 years old, said, "Dad, Mr. Mulvey can really skate fast." Goes, "That's not Mr. Mulvey."
Good.
No one ever said that about me ever.
You took your time. You were more careful when skating.
I was methodical.
Safety first, Grant. That's the way to be.
Methodical.
Grant Mulvey is here. He's my best friend in the whole wide world. If you want to check in with us, we're 312-981-7200. We'll get that done for you.
Come on, I wanted to hear you go do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Grant Mulvey in the studio with us, a retired professional ice hockey player, Blackhawk, number 22, five goals in one game, only person to do that, correct?
Yes.
Ever?
Yes.
Grant.
I keep telling Patrick Kane if he ever gets five goals, he has to get a fight, because I got in a fight that night. Also, in the second period, and after the game, Tony Esposito, he was so mad at me because he said, "You had a game going, and why did they take you? You allowed them to take you out of the game by getting in a fight." And I said, "No, I didn't." I argued with him, and I ended up with 5 and 7 minutes in penalties, and. It was quite a game, and it was against the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah, I know.
It was against the St. Louis Blues and Mike Liute, who's going to be playing in goal. So hopefully I'll be able to get a shot on net.
Won't that be nice?
That wasn't the game, the total bloodied picture that's going around on the internet.
No, no, that's different.
I love that.
That's
such
a
stud. Grant Mulvey.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Might be your best friend, but
yeah.
He's a stud.
Yep.
Yeah.
A couple of things. Number one, the Blackhawks right now are without some of their best players, and yet they're finding ways to win. How are they pulling this off?
They're playing exceptionally well. Their defense, again, Duncan Keith is playing fantastic. Their goaltending, Scott Darling has stepped up in a major way. Crawford went down, completely.
Appendicitis problem.
Yeah, and he went down, and Scott Darling has come out and played fantastic.
Yeah.
Duncan Keith has really quarterbacked the defense with Hjalmarsson.
Mm-hmm.
I really like what their young defense are doing. At the end of the day, they have to play strong defensively. They're not going to score enough goals to open the game up and score, 7 or 8 goals. So they have to really tighten down the hatches on the back end, and they're doing that. And their forwards, Marian Hossa is playing fantastic.
Leads the team in goals.
He's unbelievable, fantastic. And they're young kids. The young players are really playing well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's making up for having superstars like Brent Seabrook and Jonathan Toews out of the lineup now, and Corey Crawford. You know, to think that those three are out of the lineup and they're still winning games, which is fantastic.
Yeah, agreed.
Somebody wants to gush over you, Grant. Jim, you're a Blackhawks fan.
Yes, ma'am. I sure am, Wendy. I had season tickets from 1966 till 2008. Never saw him win a cup in those years, but I did have a chance to see Grant Mulvey's entire home career with the Blackhawks. And I just wanted to tell Mr. Mulvey that I was at that game, 5 goals, and I saw probably over 1,000 games in my life, and I have my top moments. And that game, I remember it all the time, and it's in my top 5 of 1,000 games that I saw. So I just wanted to say thanks.
Well, thank you very, very much. That's an honor. Again, To wear the Blackhawk uniform is an honor, and to play professional sports in this city is an honor, and to play back when I played and to have someone like yourself remember any part of my career, you must have slow motion TV, Jim, thank you very, very much. It means so much. It means so much to all of our all of the players that played in any one of the uniforms for all of the professional teams in Chicago to have the fans remember what we did every day. Some days not so well, some days a little better than others, but for the most part, we were part of a great, great city and great fans. And thank you very much, Jim.
Yeah, you're welcome, Grant. I would have. Been mad at you had you not drawn that penalty that day. The whole game.
Oh, thank you.
Have a nice Christmas.
Thanks,
Jim. Thank you.
Grant, you have to feel it. I've walked around the UC with you before a game, and everybody who sees you, they just light up. They're so happy to see you. And you say to yourself, I haven't been a member of this team for years, and yet the respect and admiration and love you get when you walk around there is just unsurpassed. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's really what John McDonough and Rocky Wirtz and the Blackhawks have done in the last 10 years, the last 8 years. That excitement is fantastic. And I've been living in this city for many, many years now. I turned pro in 1974, and I've had a business career since I played hockey. And so now with what the Blackhawks have done, with what John McDonough and Rocky Wirtz have brought back that excitement to the United Center, it really allows us to be so privileged to walk around and enjoy the fans like Jim, who had remembered and was at the game that we did so well at. And so they come up, and all of us are very, very easy to walk up to and say hello, especially in the UC. It's just a fantastic. I was with Adam Burrish and Ben Eager on Friday night's game, and fans were coming up to them, and it was just fantastic. They were very approachable, and that's all because of what's gone on in the last many, many years of the Chicago Blackhawks.
Sure.
All right, we got somebody else who wants to talk to you. Angie, Grant Mulvey.
Hi. Hey, Grant.
Hi, Angie.
I just wanted to tell you that when I was a kid, we didn't go on summer or winter. We didn't go on vacation. We came to Cubs games or we came to Blackhawks games, and getting all for Clint here. my dad was such a huge Hawks fan, and all three of us kids were. And after the game, we always hung out. We went downstairs and we'd wait for you guys to come up. And you were always so gracious and chatted with us and visited with us. And that'll be a memory that will never, ever go away.
Oh, that's so sweet, Angie.
Yeah, thank you very much, Angie. That gate 3.5 was just a fantastic place. They should do a real. They should somehow capture a movie or a documentary about gate 3.5 for the Blackhawks to think of all the wonderful people that waited there after wins, but also after losses. And they let you know you walked right by them, and they let you know that you did really well, and they let you know that you didn't do so well. And the night that I scored five goals, two ladies that are still dear, dear, unfortunately one has passed away, but they were dear friends of my family's, and I was their family. And actually, Marcia Fleming is probably listening today. And they waited until I came up. And today, Mike Fleming, who is a fantastic pal of mine, mm-hmm. we share Blackhawk tickets. Mm-hmm. And Marcia, his mother, is the woman. And it was Mrs. Hartnett that my son's godmother, who's Debbie Hartnett, Mrs. Hartnett and Mrs. Fleming waited for me.
Wow.
And I was the last one to get out of the dressing room, and they were at gate 3.5. And there are stories like Angie's stories, a thousands and thousands of them. It should there should be a documentary
there
done
be.
Yeah. on Gate 3
there
and a
called
half.
Gate 3 and a half.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Angie,
yeah.
It's so nice of you to call.
Oh, well, I to get a chance to talk to Grant and hear his voice. I'm happen to running between buildings at work and just to hear him and the love for the Blackhawks we've always had, my dad's always had, and he instilled in us is it's something very, very special, and that you guys always took the time to talk and visit and not just shake your hand and keep going or sign an autograph and keep going. You guys stood and chatted, and that meant the world to us as we were kids, and we carry that with us. So
perfect.
I thank you.
Well, thank you, Angie, and happy holidays to your entire family, and thank you for remembering.
Oh, yep, definitely. Thanks.
Thanks, Angie. Have
Grant,
a great holiday.
Always fun to see you. Talk a little bit again about the alumni game. Where is it? When is it? How is it?
We are playing. Our alumni game is going to be played on December 31st, New Year's Eve. Mm-hmm. And it's in St. Louis mm-hmm. at Busch Stadium. Fantastic venue for all the Cub fans. Go to a game in St. Louis. Cheer loud. The boys in blue will win.
Right.
And this time the boys in red will win.
I think so.
It's going to be fun. And it's
at 1:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, 1:30.
So you'll have time to go out and celebrate New Year's Eve afterwards.
Yeah, we're going to Kid Rock.
Are you really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm a fan. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
All summer long. Yeah. Cowboy
full
song.
Day.
Yeah, we'll have a full day.
Wow. That's...
And then we get to see the boys play on January 2nd.
Nice.
They'll play for real.
Yeah.
On the Blackhawks will play the Blues on January 2nd in the Winter Classic, which will be awesome.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Happy
Thank you, Grant.
Christmas.
Yeah. Merry Christmas to everyone at WGN. And Wendy and Bill, you guys are the greatest.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh, thank you. All right. A quick break. Thank you, Grant. A quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. The greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn. Sing the praises of Zorn.
Not just any Zorn, Eric Zorn, feisty columnist for your Chicago Tribune. Hello, feisty Eric Zorn.
Hi, I'm feeling not just feisty, but a little bit abashed.
You are?
Week.
Why
yeah.
is that? Why?
Well, Mary Schmeek and I do this this thing every year where we gather at the Old Town School of Folk Music and we sing holiday songs, just a big sing-along thing we do there. And it's real popular, and we have really great musicians behind us. And this year, something happened that was really unfortunate, which was that we decided that we had people tell stories about Santa.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this contest every year. We ask people to submit. Usually it's like a song parody, something funny. But this year we decided we'd tell some touching stories about Santa, how Santa has intersected with their lives. And, you know, there's some people who express doubts about Santa, and some people who are skeptics about this.
You don't believe, you don't receive.
That's what they
exactly.
say.
Exactly. So on Saturday, our shows are usually in the evening, but we have one show that's on Saturday afternoon, and the shows are the same, but a lot of people bring their kids, their families mm-hmm. to these shows. And the story, and what happened was we have five shows and five winners. And we pick the winners, and what we do is we just take the names, we write to all of them and say, what shows can you come to? Because it's a busy time of year. People have other things to do. You know, unbelievably, people have other things to do than to go see me sing songs.
Seems rude.
I don't know why. But so we coordinate with them, and it's just like, well, I can go here and here, and I can't go here. And it's a little bit of an organizational thing. But I do it. I do it gladly. I do it for the people.
Yeah.
And we ended up, the story that just ended up because this woman could make it on Saturday afternoon was one story that was particularly skeptical.
Oh, no. About the existence of Santa?
About the existence of Santa Claus. I mean, it was nakedly skeptical.
What's wrong
about
with this
it.
Woman?
Well, it was a good story. It was a very touching story. It was about her. You know, I can read a little bit of it here without. You know, I don't want to give her too much publicity. But it was actually a very nice story. But she talked about. It starts that I was 8 when my parents divorced. Christmas had always been hard. It got harder when my parents were split because they loathed each other.
That's terrible.
Isn't this a great story to be telling for kids? But, you know, it's a good story. I have to say, I mean, it was one of the best. We received dozens of entries, and this was really one of the best written, best. But it was a story. It was a real life story about about Christmas and how Christmas is not, you know, always this jolly, happy, wonderful
right.
thing.
Right. Some people don't enjoy it as much as others.
Some people don't. And so, you know, she talks about how this cold December night and her mother had agreed to go to the mall. And then all of a sudden she starts doubting the existence of Santa Claus on top of all the other problems she has. And she talks about her broken heart and how then she decided that Santa Claus was based in humanity's tenacious devotion to hope. I mean, even under tough circumstances, it's a beautiful thing. It is all about love. But again, it was a very skeptical story. And, you know, afterwards, parents were saying to us, they said, you know, like, it was a very nice program, lovely singing, great music, but it's going to be a long car ride home.
Oh, yeah, sure.
As we try to explain to our children how someone could be so skeptical about Santa Claus. And we just felt awful about that because the whole point of this show, and we kept politics out of it, and that's hard.
That is hard.
That is really hard for me to do. You know, it's like I did the whole show with a sock in my mouth, actually. Made it hard to sing, but I had to do it.
That's how the Muppets started.
So we had done this, and the other stories were actually really, you know, were
a little more upbeat.
A little more upbeat, but then we had to massage one for Sunday, and I want to actually read this because it's really good.
All right.
And this is our winning story. Is there time for this now? But you know what we should do? Let's wait. Let's wait a few minutes.
Do a quick break?
Yeah. That's a good idea. And then I'll read it because it's a great story.
That works. You're good, Eric. You really are. Way to read hand signals.
Feisty as professional is Eric Zorn. Stick around. A story that you just need to hear, a Christmas tale from Eric Zorn coming up next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Eric Zorn is here. He is the Burl Ives of our generation. I'm not the first person to say that. I'm sure of it. Eric, you were just telling us a story, and we had to take a quick break, but catch us up.
It just happens in radio, doesn't it?
It happens all the time in radio.
Well, I'll just set this up that over the weekend, Mary Schmeek and I did our Songs of Good Cheer programs. 18 years we've been doing these.
Nice.
And we always have a contest, and this year the contest was people to submit stories they'd written about Santa Claus, having to do with Santa Claus, or you know, loosely organized on that. Mm-hmm. And I was explaining how some of them were a little bit too skeptical about the existence of Santa for our audience, which has a lot of kids in it sometimes. And
the matinee show,
so
certainly.
The matinees do. And Sundays, our show is at 4 p.m. And this was a particularly moving entry, and I wanted to read it. And I'll tell you how we set it up.
Okay.
Because it's... many children go through periods of great skepticism about Santa Claus, and this puts demands on their parents. A man named Steve Cruz of Glenview, C-R-E-W-S. He was a reporter and editor at the Tribune. He went to work as a deputy press secretary for Mayor Jane Byrne, a corporate media consultant after that, crisis management expert. And many years ago, when his son Sam was about 8 and expressing certain doubts, Steve managed that little crisis by channeling Santa's voice. Since he had Santa write Sam a letter that framed this issue. And his wife, Evelyn, submitted the letter to our contest in late October. And that's when Steve was in hospice care. And only after we selected it as a winner of this contest did we learn that Steve had died on November 3rd at age 75. And Sam came to our show. And Sam... And that's now a man. And he read this letter that Santa had written to him. And it goes like this. Dear Sam, your dad stayed up late last night to tell me that you now know as much about me as I do about you. Good. I'm glad you asked. And don't worry. No child ever leaves me. Ask your mom. Ask your dad. They know I don't live in the North Pole, really. It's too cold. They know, you know, I don't usually ride in a sleigh. That's really dangerous. But they love me, and so will you. You will love me 50 years from now. What do you think happened last night, just as you were asking all these questions about me? Why, a baby was born out in Kalispell, Montana. That's right. Just as you were maybe being a little skeptical, putting aside your belief, a brand new child was born who's going to put that belief to good use. So long as that keeps happening, I'll never be out of a job. Sam, I want to wish you a wonderful life. If you don't mind, I'll continue to drop by on future Christmases just to make sure you're okay. Love, Santa.
Very nice.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, it addresses the entire, you know, meaning of the tradition and
you know what it reminds me of? It's like a modern day Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus.
Yes, exactly. It really was.
That little girl years and years ago who wrote a letter to a newspaper saying essentially the same thing. I'm not sure that Santa Claus exists. And then the paper let her know that, yeah, he does.
Well, I can't remember the newspaper that was the Virginia letter was written to. I think it was a New York paper, maybe the New York Herald. But yeah, Mary and I, after the thing on Saturday, where we read a letter to an audience of children that was quite skeptical.
Yeah.
And it was like we were thinking, well, the New York paper said, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. The Chicago Tribune columnists go, well, maybe not so much. Like, this is what you get. But it's a great tradition.
Yeah.
And it's one that's difficult to explain and finesse. And these days when there's so much information is at everybody's fingertips all the time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't even think of that. If a kid who has grabs their parents' cell phone or probably has their
has
own.
A kid has their own cell phone.
But, you know, at a younger age and Google's the big question, they could be careful what questions you ask the Google machine. That's all I want to say.
There was always some kid that would figure out how long it would take Santa Claus to visit each house in the world. And, you know, the math doesn't quite add up.
Sure, go to NORAD. You can track Santa. We do that every year.
Yeah, there's something about how, in fact, if you moved that fast with that much stuff, it would create like a huge ball of fire that would consume the earth or something. Can I read one more of these stories? This was one.
Although
that
somebody just texted, "What the hell, you guys? I'm crying in the Starbucks drive-thru
oh,
right now."
No.
Well, that was Steve Cruz's letter from Santa.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful letter. This was a lighter one. This is much more typical of the ones we got. I really like this one. This was Jane Barker who wrote this on Saturday night. Came on. The winners come up on stage and read them. My dad worked for the phone company. Every December of my young life, he would pull out the stepladder from the basement, set it up in the kitchen, and carefully, meticulously go about attaching a wire from one end of the kitchen to the other. My brothers and I watched in reverence. He would go outside and tinker with something on the house and return to proclaim, "It's connected. The Santa line. A direct conduit to the North Pole." Dad had connections. He knew how those wires worked. Yep, Santa could hear everything we said. He knew if we were naughty or nice, and we bought it hook, line, and sinker. And if we occasionally wandered into the kitchen to mention the cool cowboy boots or baseball glove, please not a doll, we wanted for Christmas, well, who could blame us? And of course, Santa heard us. He knew just what we most wanted and heard when we apologized for not being quite so nice. But it really wasn't my fault. He started it. The magic lives on. My brother set up the wire every year for his girls and then gifted the magical device to his eldest when she had her first child. The wonder of Christmas and the innocence of belief. It's terrific stories.
What's the day where a parent can say to their child or children, you know, Santa is watching.
Hey! Oh,
does that start about November 1st?
Would
you say fairly that's like early November, December? Where
I
you
say
just
Thanksgiving.
Go, yeah. Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving. What about like January 1st.
Well, I used to do it all year. I still do.
Like,
Santa's watching.
Come on. Well, I wonder how long you can hold that idea in your head that Santa's watching. That would be oppressive, wouldn't it, to feel like you're being watched?
Not when you're in the bathroom. It's just everywhere
Santa
else.
Santa and Big Brother are watching.
Why is Santa so jolly? Because he knows we're all the naughty girls.
I mentioned, Eric, that you have a special guest, or two actually, in studio with us. You've not heard them, but your mom and dad are in town.
They came in for the show. Yeah,
very
they came
nice.
From Ann Arbor. They took the Amtrak in, and it's really great to have them come. They worked the first one 18 years ago, and they've come periodically. And it's usually the weather this time of year is pretty dicey, and the weather looked awful this year.
Yeah.
But we figured, well, they'll take the train, and so it's great.
Do you fall into a different role when your parents are around? Do you all of a sudden become the kid in the family again?
Do you think so? I don't know.
They say no.
No. I'm too old for that, I guess.
Oh.
But it's great to have them come visit. And last night during the last song, you know, I got to go out in the audience and I sat with them and sang with them for the last song of the show. So
makes me sad I don't have parents. You're lucky, Eric. Enjoy
them.
I'm
very lucky. I know that. I know it's
Are they staying with you?
Yeah.
They're staying at your house?
Mm-hmm.
How's
that's
that work?
Love.
That
how's that work?
Is that fun?
That's it's great. They're fun. They have a whole basement apartment down there for them.
Oh, that works out.
And they don't make they don't turn the radio up too loud or anything.
Yeah.
And so
turn that music down.
So it's nice. It's great, and they have a good relationship now with our kids who are now young adults.
Yeah.
And generations go on.
Will they stay through Christmas?
No.
Oh, God, please. Are you kidding?
No, we're going down to the Art Institute this afternoon, and I'm going to put them on the train.
Very nice.
So it'll be cool.
So
just
nice
any
to
random
meet you.
Train, Eric, or the one back to their
I'm
house?
Just going to put them on a train. I mean,
see where they end up.
The people at Amtrak are very good about sorting these things out. So if they end up like down in Indianapolis, they'll put them on the right train.
Right.
I'm sure
all right.
They will.
Very quickly, people can find these letters on your website in your column, correct?
I will.
People want it.
I am going to post these stories. Yes. But if you're feeling like you don't want to be, you don't want to expose anyone to excessive skepticism, maybe
yes.
you wouldn't want to look at all of them. But there are five wonderful stories, and they'll be at ChicagoTribune.com/Zorn later today.
Eric, thanks
Merry
so much.
Christmas.
Yeah,
Merry
we won't
Christmas.
See you next week. So have a great holiday.
Yeah, we'll see you guys next year. See you next year.
Oh, he got to say it first.
Not
darn
fair.
You.
Not fair.
I'm really quick.
That's Eric Zorn, everybody. Read him in the
Thank
Chicago
you.
Tribune. A quick break, then more coming up. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Great job, Kim. Thank you so very much. Hi, Bill.
Wendy, it's nice to see you. Hi, everybody. This is part two of our Monday show. We're thrilled that you're listening, and if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is your best bet. Did you by any chance see last night on CBS, they ran these episodes of the Dick Van Dyke Show?
Oh, darn it.
In color.
I forgot to watch them.
Wendy.
Was it
they
good
were in
color,
color,
or was it the bad
well,
washed out pastel-y color?
It was somewhere in the middle. Like, the process of colorization, although miraculous, isn't quite accurate.
Yeah.
It makes it look... it's a very pastel-based palette, and it is. It's washed out. So it's improved from the days where it was just not right, where you go, I could tell this is in black and white. But it was so strange to see surroundings that you're familiar with only in black and white.
The ottoman in color. What color was it?
It was green, like an avocado-y green. And then stuff in the kitchen was like a sky blue, like a lot of the appliances were a sky blue color. Like because you're so used to seeing it in black and white,
yeah.
it was all just shades of gray in my head. So it was very jarring. But more jarring was the fact that I had seen both of those episodes many times. It was just strange to watch them modern day in prime time on a network. The pacing is just different. The Dick Van Dyke Show was paced in the 60s, and the sitcom world has changed a little bit. These were gentler times, you know?
Can I ask you a question about the colors?
Yeah.
They made those up, right?
Well, no, they're accurate. They've got a computer program that reads it and determines what the actual colors were.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So the colors you were seeing were true to what the colors really were. Not 100% accurate.
How can it read black and white?
It just it determines from the shades of gray. It's black and white, but with shades of gray, it somehow determines what the actual colors were and matches those colors.
That's pretty remarkable.
It is remarkable.
Because they make programs now. I know Benjamin Moore has one and probably the other paint companies where you can take a picture of your house, download it into this program and say, okay, what would the walls look like if they were turquoise?
Right.
So I didn't know if they just did research to see if anything was ever mentioned.
Yeah.
I didn't know that they could just...
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. It's a fantastic world we live in. Now, there was one joke yesterday that I thought to myself, they wouldn't have gotten away with this. It's the episode where Laura Petrie is on a TV show and she kind of divulges the fact that Alan Brady, Rob's boss, wears a hairpiece, right? So
I remember that one.
In the toward the end of the episode, they're in the office after it's happened and all heck is breaking loose, as you could possibly imagine. So Maury Amsterdam, Buddy Sorrell, says to Rob, when they're talking about when it was discovered last night, he goes, well, after you kicked her and punched her and hit her, then what did you do? And that wouldn't play today. You couldn't say that. Guy, you couldn't ask a guy if he beat his wife up for doing something awful.
But it was a joke, wasn't it?
It was a joke, but like at the time, it was almost like acceptable, you know? There was also this weirdness. The guy who hosted the show that Laura was a guest on, every time he made her say something, that she didn't want to say, he would do a funny dance. Like, he did this little dance. He did it three times. And you just go, like, now nobody would believe that. A host on a show, if he got his guest to divulge some information. Like, you and I host a daily talk show. When we get our guest to divulge something, neither of us ever do a funny dance.
That's so crazy. No. I think I've seen Craig Ferguson do it,
sometimes,
actually.
But he's British. British people will do a funny dance.
All right, some more information. Hi, Pete. Did you watch the Dick Van Dyke Show?
Yeah, I saw a little bit of it, and the color was pretty good. And Bill's right. It's much better now.
Mm-hmm.
But as you guys are talking about that, it reminded me of my family. We had a black and white TV like everybody else in the neighborhood except for, like, one person.
The Richies.
And, my dad got this device to turn our black and white TV into a color TV. It was amazing.
How would that be done? How could they do that?
How did they do it for Dick Van Dyke?
It was a sheet of plastic, and on the plastic, the top third of it was blue, the middle third of it was red, and the bottom third of it was green. He slapped it on the TV and goes, "Hey, color!"
Not accurate color, but color.
It was hilarious. And then he had this other thing. There was a magnifying glass because we had a real tiny TV. And so you put the magnifying glass in front of the screen, and if you were in the right spot in the room, the screen was bigger. But anywhere else, it looked like you had just been invaded by aliens. It was hilarious.
You had to see it, like, right from the very middle of the screen, right? Not to the left or the right, but right dead center?
Amen. but he tried.
Boy, it sounds like your father was quite the creative type.
Well, yeah, and I think he had a bookie, too, but that's another day.
All right.
All right, well, call us back on that day, Pete.
Okay, bye.
Thank you.
My dad managed an appliance store, so we would get these things, like, when they first came out on the market, and we had a projection TV, so it would be the equivalent of a widescreen TV, but it was the first version of it. And what you did is you open up the center section, and then it came out about a foot and a half in front of the television, and it had those same three colors that were just described. So then they would project onto the screen, and you had a big, giant TV. But if you didn't sit in the very middle, like if you sat a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right, you couldn't see anything. Right in the middle, it was pretty
perfect.
Good, but honestly, a foot and a half on either side, it was awful.
Well, prior to getting a new TV, we had an old one that was a rear projection, because that's if you wanted a big screen TV, that was 19 years ago when we got married. That was our wedding gift from my in-laws. God, they loved us.
Sure.
And the same thing, since it was a rear projection, I always teased about we had a no-def TV. But seriously, the same thing years later, even if you were off to the side, you can see it.
I know.
But not very well.
I know. But all that aside, the Dick Van Dyke Show, I think, is as good as good can be when it comes to a TV sitcom. It really is. The casting was magnificent. The writing was outstanding. The acting was brilliant. It was just so nice to see that in primetime. I'm still a little confused because this is a Christmas move. Why you wouldn't put the Christmas episode on? The two they chose were both good episodes, no doubt about it.
But not Christmas.
But, and their Christmas episode, in all fairness, isn't great. They're doing... Alan Brady decides that everybody on the show's family is invited to be on a variety version. Well, it's always a variety show, but a Christmas special. So he's got,
It wasn't as strong as these other two.
Well, but it should have been Christmas. It should have been a Christmas episode. It's confusing.
I didn't know they were doing this for Christmas. I just thought it was an anniversary of the show, maybe.
Well, the Lucy one that they did last year got huge ratings. So they said, we're going to do more of these in the future. And I know there's two more Lucy ones. I think they're coming up this week, I think, unless they've already been on. But I wanted to make a point of seeing, I love Dick Van Dyke, so I wanted to see this. And it was fun to watch.
Good to know.
Yeah.
We have to take a quick break, and it is a military Monday, so we will find out about what's going on a military Monday coming up next, 720 WGN. Take home a piece of history from the Chicago Tribune. Get your own Cubs memorabilia, including the newspaper from the historic win. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com right now. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And every other Monday, we team up with Walgreens and host a Military Monday segment. The Federal Savings Bank is also behind this. And today we have Todd Connor in the studio, CEO of Bunker Labs. Todd, how are you?
Good, Wendy. Good to be with you.
Local guy, BA from Northwestern University and an MBA from the University of Chicago. We need to know about Bunker Labs.
Bunker Labs. Sure. So Bunker Labs is a not-for-profit organization that we started here in Chicago about 2.5 years ago. And our mission is to help military veterans start their own businesses and become successful entrepreneurs.
All right, that's a huge undertaking because not everyone can start their own business. And being in the military and coming back, the adjustment is difficult sometimes.
It's a big adjustment, yeah. And it's interesting because there's a lot of history around this. After World War II, 49% of military veterans actually came back. Those that survived World War II came back and started their own business. So you figure this is the late 1940s, 1950s. They were coming back. They were opening up restaurants, plumbing shops, local brick and mortar businesses. They were also starting companies like Edelman Public Relations and Comcast. And I mean, a lot of the Fortune 100 that we know today was started by World War II veterans back in the 50s. So starting a business is hard, but we know that military veterans have historically done that. And this generation, this generation's veterans, they're going to get out this year. They're young. We're expecting 250,000 service members to leave the military this year alone. And for the next 5 years, if we continue with the troop drawdown schedules that have been published. But if all those men and women come back and we get 250,000 each year, that's a lot of people. And the data says that 25% of them are actually interested in starting their own business. And some people think that that's very surprising because you think of the military and you think, well, isn't this a group of people that, you know, is used to taking orders and isn't starting a business very different from that? But what I like to remind people is that only 1% of young Americans, 18-year-olds, are going to actually choose to take the oath and join the military. That's a very small number.
It is small.
So we are kind of protected, the 99% of us, by the 1% that are largely young overseas doing kind of America's work in uniform. And so when that, I always say to do that, to make that decision as an 18-year-old that I'm going to go join the military, you're willing to take on risk. You're willing to do something difficult. You're willing to do something that most of your peers are not willing to do. So it's not surprising to me that on the flip side of that experience, that you actually would want to start a business, which is similar in terms of that challenge, that ambition, willing to do something that's risky, willing to do something that's different, willing to do something that is of service.
So what is their course of action, Todd? They've served their time in the military and they come back. What is their move in terms of you, where you're concerned and Bunker Labs?
Sure. So, you know, when people get out of the military, I think a few things have to happen, right? I mean, getting out of the military is a difficult transition because you're moving, you're leaving your unit, you're leaving what you're used to. Mm-hmm. So I think for a lot of military veterans, when they come home, I'm not sure that the first thing they're going to do is start a business. I think a lot of them need to move home, get reestablished. If they haven't been to college yet, a lot of them are going to use their GI Bill and go back to school or take a job and just kind of get readjusted to society. But when that happens, our experience is that typically one or two jobs out, a lot of the veterans then begin to ask, like, what's next for me?
Yeah.
And that's really when the ambition kicks in, where you say, okay, I did two tours in Afghanistan. I'm back in Chicago now. I've gotten my college degree. I've taken on a job. I've done, you know, sales or something. And now I feel like I want to figure out what's next for me. And inevitably, a lot of the ambitious military veterans that we work with, which are most, I would argue, most military veterans are ambitious, they think about starting their own business. And so we've got the Bunker Labs, which is an organization that's ready to help them. And we've got different ways in which we help veterans. We have workshops. We run a 14-week accelerator. We have monthly networking events called Bunker Brews. We've got an online platform where it's accessible anywhere around the world. So even if you're still on active duty and you think that what you want to do when you get out is start a business, we've got an online platform that you can log in for free and watch all these interviews with other successful veteran entrepreneurs, people like Dick Portillo, who was in the Marine Corps before he started Portillo's. So we've got a bunch of stuff online. We've got workshops in person. And then we've got classes, and then we even have ways to help people raise money if that's what they need to do, whether it's angel funding or seed capital or Series A or institutional investments or debt financing. So we try to sort of support them across the continuum of what they need. And the last thing is, we started this in Chicago, but now we're in 14 cities.
Wow.
So if you're in one of the 14 cities where we've got a chapter, I mean, the first thing we say to anybody is to just show up in person and get to know people. I think the best impact always happens when you're able to sit with somebody over a cup of coffee or over a beer if it's happy hour.
But face-to-face.
And face-to-face and have a conversation. How are you? Welcome back. You know, what's going on? How are you feeling? Thanks for what you did. Let's talk about what's next. So we're big believers in that person-to-person interaction.
And there's a fraternity among the military, much like if I went to Notre Dame and you went to Notre Dame. You go, hey, I had a similar background as you. I could help you out. The military exists in kind of the same way, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny that you say that because I always say, let's scrap the term veteran because it feels very loaded. It sort of feels somber. I said, let's talk about this as military alumni, because now it sort of shifts this into being an asset for you. So when we convene military alumni, what I always say is being a member of the military, that's the most powerful network you have. The problem is that we haven't created good sort of alumni associations. We haven't created good organizations that bring the alumni together, because we know that in Chicago, military veterans are throughout the highest echelons of corporate, of the entrepreneurship sector. Military veterans are angel investors. I mean, they're all there doing all this stuff. But what we haven't done is sort of put them into a network. And so the core part of what Bunker Labs is doing is really trying to create that locally thriving network and bring all those people together.
Todd Connor is with us. Now, you're a Navy veteran, and you were out during Operation Iraqi Freedom on the USS Bunker Hill. Is that where Bunker Labs got its name?
Yeah, or are you an All in the Family fan? That's my bet.
It's an Archie Bunker reference.
Yeah, I thought so.
Well, I joke because I say that Bunker Labs is, in fact, a Navy reference to the USS Bunker Hill, and then my Army friends remind me that that ship is named after a famous Army battle at the Bunker Hill. It's sort of an Army-Navy reference. Yeah, we initially were calling it the War Room with two of my initial co-conspirators. And somebody said, that sounds kind of aggressive. And I said, yeah, you're kind of right. And then somebody else proposed, how about the bunker? And I thought, well, that's kind of ironic because I was on the Bunker Hill. So it's been the bunker ever since.
So you come home from serving in the Navy, and thank you for your service, by the way. Who helped you get this off the ground? Because now you want to give back and help others in your alumni group get started on their businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should say, too, that the whole network of what we're doing is all the 14 cities, they are all led by military veterans who have themselves started businesses. So what I love about this network and this professional network that I've now got as a result of this work is that they are all people who have been there, done that, and then want to give back.
Yeah.
And I mean, very few of our chapter leaders need to do this. I mean, Nobody needs to do this, but they all just feel a real desire to want to do this for our kind of brothers and sisters who are going to be coming home. So, you know, for me, my transition was, I was from here. I went to Northwestern. I did 4 years on active duty. So I still had a pretty good network from Northwestern, but even I would say, it's still hard. You know, it's still hard. I give the analogy. Somebody was asking me once, what's it like to get out of the military? And in their heads, it was the struggles with PTSD and all that stuff. I said, my analogy is like this. If you were, and I was actually having lunch with a lawyer, and he'd been a lawyer. He's probably 45 years old. He'd been a lawyer his whole professional career in Chicago. I said, getting out of the military is like this. It's like if I said to you, okay, Monday you're moving to Seattle, and you can do anything you want, but you can't be a lawyer, and you can wear anything you want, but you can't wear a suit and tie.
What would you do?
What would you do? You'd show up in Seattle on Monday morning and say, well, I'm here now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the challenge of getting out of the military. I don't even know that it's so much of what we think of like wartime activity and all that stuff. It's jarring to leave a unit that you're closely associated with, a profession that you know very deeply, show up to a new location, have to wear something different, figure out what your core skill set is. Like, you know that you're talented, you know that you're smart, but how do you apply that? It's tough. And I think it's hard for anybody, even those that went to like places like Harvard and Northwestern and had good networks. It's hard for them. And so we're trying to make that easier for the next person in line.
He's Todd Connor, and he's CEO of Bunker Labs. And could you tell us how to get in touch with Bunker Labs if someone's listening right now or a family member needs some assistance?
You bet. Yeah. So we're at 1871, which is Chicago's award-winning incubator in the Merchandise Mart. They can come see us in person, come to our monthly Bunker Brews event, come visit us online at bunkerlabs.org, or join our online community and do our online program, which is called bunkerinabox.org. And that's free and available to anybody.
You've got it all figured out. Congratulations.
Thanks, Wendy. Thank you, Bill.
Appreciate it.
And for each Military Monday segment, the Federal Savings Bank has teamed up with Walgreens to make a considerable donation to the USO of Illinois Sweet Home Chicago Care Package Program to express appreciation to the men and women who serve as members of the United States Armed Forces. So items to be donated include baby wipes, nuts and seeds, some beef jerky. Who doesn't like some good beef jerky? Good protein there. Thick black socks, seasoned salt, Kleenex, of course, the travel size, lip balm, chewing gum, and ramen noodles. And Todd Conn, CEO of Bunker Labs, continued success in all of this. Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
We'll take a quick break and then some news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, Tom Dreesen just called us and said to thank you for mentioning Harvey.
You're welcome, Tom.
He was wondering what the report was, and now we know.
Really? Because I just got a call from Steve Harvey.
What did Steve Harvey say?
He said, thanks for mentioning my name.
That's
Those
crazy.
Are both impressive. I just got one from Lou Boudreau, which is very difficult to get.
Yeah. Wow.
Hey, can I ask you guys some questions, maybe some advice? What would you do in this situation?
Absolutely.
Are you going to take our advice?
You'll do the opposite of whatever Steve might tell you to do.
Hey, I'm open to suggestion. I will ultimately do what I want, but I like to hear what people think about this because I think this is a very set way.
I'd sell it.
Let me explain.
Okay.
So going running some errands on a Saturday, I had to stop at the ATM, which I find funny because I still call the cash station,
mm-hmm.
and my kids are like, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
But that was the very first name that it was ever called, was the
cash station. Sure.
So I needed to go to an ATM. I went to my bank, and there are some lanes for the actual bank activity, and then there are two ATM lanes.
Right.
So when you pull up in the parking lot, what I typically do is I pick a lane and wait behind a car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as I'm pulling into the parking lot, there are two people at each of the ATM lanes, and then there is one single line of about eight cars behind that split.
Right.
So I'm frustrated because that's not how you do it. Don't you pick... It's the luck of the draw. Like when you're at a supermarket, you pick a checkout lane, you go to that lane. Sometimes if you see a shorter one, maybe you'll move back and forth. But don't you have to commit to a lane? You cannot stand there, or I guess sit there in your car, eight cars single file behind it. There's no room left to pull up anymore.
You know, it's funny. It's almost at the discretion of whoever is starting a line.
Right. The person waiting decides whether...
They decide.
Yeah. That is... Because I'm waiting and I'm trying to inch up a little bit because everyone was in the center. So I had room to go to the lane on the right.
Yeah.
And I was going to try and pull past all those cars.
But why?
They should pick one. No one could fit in the parking lot. Do you know what I mean? When single file, no one could fit in the parking lot anymore.
Okay, that's a problem. But let's look at it a different way. What's the fairest way?
You pick one and wait behind it.
No, the fairest way would be... the one line, and then you'd alternate whichever one opens.
That's fair.
Whoever gets in line next,
then
gets
have
the next
one.
Spot.
Well, that's what they're trying to do.
No, have one lane.
I want to ask those people why they won't the hell get out of their car. You're going to wait in line with eight people in front of you? Get out of your car.
Right.
Because it's so much easier to just do everything in your car.
God, come on.
If I could figure out how to do the show in my car, I would.
You're doing it from your car? The Jewel by Me has six or seven regular aisles that you would go to, you know, the checkout aisle. But then they also have a section of six that are express, 15 items or less. So almost every time when I'm there, there is one single line, and then the next available one, whichever the six is open, you get to visit that one, right? But every once in a while, somebody will just pass by, and despite the fact that there's a line of six or seven or eight people, they'll go, well, I'm not waiting in line. That one's opening up right now. And they'll just jump in. And you should see the rage. And I get it.
Well, that's not fair.
No.
If there's a single file line, I'm just saying you're in a car, so you have to make a decision and pick one or the other.
If you happen upon that and you're the first car that's not, like you're number one in the line.
Then I can choose to wait
decide.
Behind.
Oh, well, see, so you can't have it both ways then. So you're saying then you wait. You lay back and wait. Shouldn't you have to choose then too?
I want everyone to pick a lane and wait in it so there are two lines. Really, you guys, the whole parking lot was filled up. It's a Saturday afternoon. Everybody needs money.
But what if you've committed to one of those lanes and you're in front of somebody? Because I've done this. I'm behind somebody who
who's taking forever. They're depositing 18 checks in the thing.
They're doing a refi. They're in their car just doing a refi in their
licking
house.
Their green stamps.
Right.
But that's the luck of the draw. You picked the wrong line.
No, that shouldn't play out that way.
Oh, my God. I can't stand it anymore.
You just said you don't do that, Wendy. If you're the first car up, you said you don't choose when you wait.
No, I didn't say that. I said if I'm the first one up, I will pick a lane and wait behind a particular car.
I think it should be one single line, and the next one open, you get that.
That's what my husband said, because when he's driving, he waits in the middle. I'm like, go behind that guy. He goes, no, you go for what's next. I said, that is not how it works.
I think he's right.
I wait in the middle until someone's behind me. And then
then you pick one?
And then I pick, because usually, though, you know, there's not more than two people in line.
Oh, no, there were eight.
Come on.
I'm not kidding.
Saturday afternoon. It's jam-packed.
Everybody needs money. Paul, I can't take this anymore.
No, I'm on your side here. So check this out. So yesterday I pulled up to the Chase Bank in Johnsburg, Illinois here, and they're doing the same thing. There's like six, seven, eight, nine cars deep.
This was a Chase Bank, too?
Yeah. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not doing this. There's no one that says, no, it's pick a lane. So I'm playing stupid. So I go around all nine cars.
That's what I was going to do. There was no room. Otherwise, I would have done it.
Oh, let me tell you. They talk about ruffling feathers. Oh, it was awesome. I was high-fiving myself. So I get into the next lane, and sure enough, all of a sudden, the guy pulls up next to me. You blankety-blank. I'm like, hey, dude, listen. It's supposed to be in and out. Park, find a place to park and go inside, or just pick a lane, okay? I mean, I'm not sitting here to, like, just make, you know, lines all day. So I did that. And I'll tell you, when I go to the drive-thru at a Dunkin' Donuts and I see that there's 20 cars back, yeah, you know what? I park the car.
Me too.
This is an awesome concept. I park the car, I get out of the car, and there's no line inside. So I'm like, whoa. So I go inside, get my coffee, get my croissant, whatever it's called, get out of the car, and I'm like waving my coffee in the air when I'm walking past people in the drive-thru. It's like, come on. What, are you lazy? Get out of the car.
Okay.
You save so much more time.
Paul, let me put it past Bill and Steve for this particular reason. You know, there are a lot of new McDonald's that have the double drive-through lanes.
Correct.
Yep.
So when you pull up, don't you have to choose, like, say everybody, both of them are kind of filled up. You can't wait in the middle for someone to move up. You got to keep the line going. So you have to choose either the inner drive-up or the outer one.
Right.
Same thing at a bank.
Right.
Pick
one. Can you imagine if they did that? Can you imagine... Steve, Bill, can you imagine if somebody had did that? They didn't pick one. Then I'm just curious. What would you two do if somebody had did that?
Steve, go on.
Well,
at a McDonald's where you're supposed to pick either the inner or outer, you don't wait in one line behind the double line
actually,
to choose.
I'm going to disagree with you, Wendy. I'm sorry, not just to disagree, but that happened to me recently. Emma was in the car with me, and we were like two or three back, and it was a single line that then divided in the McDonald's line, and someone ignored the line and pulled in. Maybe it was just knucklehead on the phone right now. And I was,
wait a minute.
But you can't just pull in. When you pull up, you choose the left lane or the right lane. You don't wait back to see which lane's moving quicker.
Right.
This one did. There was like one lane, and then you divided up into
right.
left to right. Well, this person went beyond the divided up line and went straight in behind another car.
Well, that's what they should do.
Are you saying they cut the line?
I don't understand that.
I think like they came off of like another entrance or something like that, and they didn't get behind anybody else.
Is it McDonald's?
Yeah.
Was it the Hamburglar?
Yeah,
that
no,
guy has no listen. Rules.
All right, Paul.
Out,
it's only you and me,
yeah,
I guess. So
hey, let's take on the world.
I'll tell you what, Paul. There's going to be one day that I'm at one lane and you're at the other, and I'll high-five you that way. And Bill and Steve will be waiting behind us in a single file line.
And we'll turn around and say, see ya.
Thanks, Paul. I can't stand it.
Now, you're the same person who gets upset when I walk in front of people on an escalator. If people are just standing on an escalator.
An escalator is a modern technology to make your...
For lazy people. For lazy people. But you always get upset when I cut in front of people.
I'm not talking about your issue now. This is my issue. It's completely different than an escalator.
Why is it fair? You say it's the luck of the draw, but you could get stuck behind somebody.
That's life, though.
It's not life. there's fair. There should be fairness in life.
There is fair. There are two lanes. You pick a lane and you wait for your turn. Why do you get so disgusted when I don't agree with you?
No, you can you disagree with me constantly. I'm fine with that. But you always pick it to your benefit. You never pick it out of fairness. It's always what helps me.
I think it's fair that way. You have people pull whatever.
So you think it's fair if you got in line behind somebody and you had a 15 or a 20 minute wait, you go, well, this is fair. I chose the wrong line. You would reason it that way?
Even though
what am I supposed to do? Like if I'm at a grocery store and I go to a register and there's a cashier that's very, very slow. And then I look at the people next to me going, whipping through one after another. I'm like, oh, crap, I chose the wrong lane.
You know, you would sit there for 20 minutes and go, no, this is fair.
Fair, but life isn't fair.
You're right, though, Wendy. We should have that single lane formula in the grocery store, too. Everyone gets in the lane, and then some do. Next register opens, we'll take you over here, ma'am.
But that's like the merging, too. Aren't you supposed to do the zipper thing when you're merging? Like if a lane is closed?
I do the zipper thing before I leave the house.
That's good to know. All right, 312-981-7200. I mean, life isn't fair. I think it's more fair to pick a lane and wait your turn.
So you would sit there for 15 minutes and go, boy, this is really unfortunate.
What am I supposed to do if I've already picked that lane?
But if it's done the right way and everybody's waiting in line, then that's eliminated. Then all of a sudden fairness plays on every move because the next one that's open, you get. That's what fair is. You don't think that's fair?
I think the line goes longer if you have one line waiting to split off to two. If people just line up in the two lanes, I think everybody would move through much quicker and the parking lot wouldn't be blocked.
All right.
Well, I mean,
I don't understand that, but all right.
I don't understand either.
All right,
so
a break and then more show, Bill and Wendy WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and Bill, somebody said, holidays getting to you two today. First, Bill, it was the kids on your lawn, and now, Wendy, it's two lanes versus one lane. Come on, first world problems here for sure.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
It is not.
It says it in the song.
Andy
Williams does not lie.
All right, we have a checker at Jewel that can help us how to deal with the line situation. Hi, Katie.
Hello. Wendy, you got me. My brain is ping-ponging because sometimes you're so like, why can't we all be nice to each other? Why can't we all just do the fair thing? And then now you're like, no, I'm not going to go in that line or no.
Well, how am I not being nice?
I'm confused. Well, no, because, well, I'm a little over nice. Like if I'm driving down two lane road and I see somebody behind me with a blinker and they're turning right, I'll move over into the left lane to make sure that they can get over or I'll move up so somebody can make the turn.
I do that too.
Well, see, but that's a nice thing to do. Don't you think it's more fair for everybody to be able to move? And I understand about the parking lot situation. If it's too full, then I get it. But if it's not, it's more fair this way because everybody gets to go soon. Because even like I think that was it you that said if somebody's got 25 checks that they're depositing at one time and they're doing them individually in the banking line, then that one person is stuck there. And I actually feel bad for them, even though I'm mad that they have picked the one line or another instead of the, I think you guys call it the zipper. I like that.
but Steve made it dirty, Katie. We apologize for Steve. Steve makes it dirty. Yeah. Well, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I get it. That's okay. That's what you guys do. But the checking lines, oh my gosh. And see, and I think of you because you're strong and you're bold, and that if somebody else was in a line or that you were in a line and somebody else cut forward in the line, you'd be the first one. Even if you weren't fighting for yourself, you'd be sticking up for all the people behind you saying, hey, these people have been waiting longer.
I would, and I would. But see, to me, waiting in one single line like at TJ Maxx or Marshall's or the Jewel for the next available clerk.
Cashier.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. I couldn't think of the word. That's how you do it. But when you're in a car, you know, I've seen some people that pick a lane and maybe it's the person in front of them that has 15 checks and then they back up and try and switch lanes.
Oh, no.
I say the person that will back up and let them get over because I feel bad for them, even though I'm mad at them because they went into the other line. But then I feel like, oh, look how long they've been waiting. And I look at people there and I'm like, really, you're doing that for one thing. Usually the other line is going to get done first because you picked that line. Why don't you just do the more fair thing? It's more fair for everybody to go in.
Yep.
And you are the first person I would think that would be defending that because you're
not in a car. In a car.
Why is it different in a car? because just standing in a line.
Standing in a line, that's what you do. You wait for the next available cashier. And for some reason, when you pull up in a car and there are two lanes, and I think this listener has texted and made my point more clear, at least to myself, try forming that single file line at a toll booth versus not picking a lane. I guess when I see several lanes and you're in a car, you have to kind of choose where you're going and go that way. Maybe it is the toll booth.
Grocery store. Because, like, some Jewels now and some regular grocery stores have made it so that you have to single file because of those people that in the self-checkouts when they had those, thank God they're all gone, and anybody who knows me will know.
I miss those. I always wanted to be a cashier at the Jewel, and I really miss having the self-checkout.
I miss them in one way, but in the other way, you have no idea how much money it is saving you personally because you're not paying the prices for all the theft that used to go through those. But that's a whole other story. But now a lot of the stores, and Jewel included, and I've been fighting for this for years, are making it so that you don't have a choice of picking which one of those express lanes that you want to go into. They've made it so you have to form a single file line because it would get so unfair. And I'm telling you, people have come to blows over not getting in the right line. I worked at Great America when I was a kid at the Bugs Bunny Theater, and I remember people literally getting into fist fights because they couldn't get into the line first or into the door first. It's just ridiculous. It's just the nicer way to be, especially at the holidays when everybody's trying to get into the bank quickly. And that's just why I'm really mostly surprised that you're fighting that. About the banking line. I'm surprised.
I did. I followed suit with what the person in front of me did, which was one single line, eight cars back, and I was like fourth in the line, but it's still no one could pull in the lot behind me, and I did. I waited for the next available one, and I pulled up. But if I'm that first car, I'm going to pick one lane or another, and I'm just going to wait my turn there. So I don't know
and
how that's being.
Behind you, I'm going to let you in if you have to wait for a like three cars longer than anybody else.
I won't back up, Katie, so you won't have to let me in. Thank
Katie,
you so
thank
much.
You.
We got time for one more. And yeah. Bill, you got to make it quick.
Yeah, I agree with you. The bank where I go, you got to drive around the bank. There's two tellers, two ATMs. And the people wait. One person will block up everything so that the people can, you know, so he gets the first ATM. Here I am, four cars back. All I want to do is go to the teller, and I can't.
Because they've blocked you. It's just, if the line wasn't long, I guess I don't care. But honestly, that line was eight cars back going back to the street. No one could pull in.
But it should, this system, the one line system, should be the most efficient system. Because if everything goes according to plan, in your case it isn't. But it should be because it just means the next available opening is yours.
But if every lane is the same, okay, that'll work.
Right.
But if you got ATMs and you got tellers.
Right, I get
which most banks do.
Right, I understand that. All right.
All right, Bill.
Thanks,
thank
Bill.
You. And I know we have to take a break, but we have somebody who works at a bank and knows the rules.
All right.
So can we take
Let's
a break?
Let's do that instead of news. Steve, you're good with that?
Absolutely. It's
right.
Fair.
Right,
I mean,
fair.
We have to take a break. Don, if you can hang on, we will find out. And I don't know which is right, but he works at a bank and knows the rules.
All right. Let's do that. News is next. Steve has the news, and then you'll know what's what. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Is this I Wait the Line?
Yeah, it is.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Issues, we've got them here. We'll cover them for you. And we're getting 50-50 texts on this. I don't want anyone to pick a side. I don't know why anyone's calling me selfish. Let me give the scenario. You pull up into your drive-through bank, and there are two lanes for an ATM. Say there's a car in each of them. I will pick a lane and pull behind that car and wait my turn. If the other car in the other lane pulls out faster, I'll go, ah, crap. Chose the wrong lane.
Yeah.
When people wait back there to see which one opens first, all of a sudden the parking lot will fill up and no one can pull into the parking lot. So I thought, isn't that the way you do it? Don't you pull behind a lane and risk maybe that person's quick? Maybe it's not. Like there's two people in two lanes. You pull into the bank. You just stay behind both lanes to see who leaves first.
I would do it that way. That's the way and I'm a gambler. And even with a gambling background, I say to myself, I want there to be peace in the universe and goodwill toward men, but fine.
Well, I just will pull behind one car,
yeah,
leaving the next car behind me to pull behind the next car.
Right.
So right. I'm not trying to be selfish. I just thought you have to pick a lane. And Robert, there's been a study done on this versus single and multiple lines. How do we do this?
Right. Hi. Taking my call. So business school a few years ago, we had probably a whole class dedicated to single Q theory versus multiple Q theory. And so this debate, totally understandable, both sides, at the risk of sounding politically correct, both sides have merit. So transparency here matters. So if you're on, you know, customer service, if you're waiting on the phone, you don't have transparency into whether the company that you're on the phone with has like a single queue or multiple queue, right? You just don't know. But if you have transparency, so the studies show that aggregate anxiety, so if you like multiple
I have
people
that, I think.
Or multiple, the aggregate anxiety is lowered when you have transparency if there's a single queue, because there's a perception. I want to emphasize perception. I'm going to come back on the other side here in a minute. There's a perception of better fairness if there's a single queue, right?
Because you're not just throwing caution in the wind. You're saying, okay, if everything in the universe plays out, that guy will go to what's ever open, then that lady will go next, and then I'll go third.
We will answer your call in the order it was received.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. So the gentleman's comment about risk is absolutely spot on, where people who arrive, let's say there's 100 people in line, and the space constraints about, you know, a parking lot and spilling out in the street, again, that's another variable that's probably above my pay grade, actually. But so the risk, if you're first, second, or third in line, you're going to be risk averse. Mm-hmm. And you may want to keep your options open by not committing to a certain queue. However, let's say there are 100 people who have arrived and there's four queues. You have the option of being certain that you're 100th, which is a pretty unattractive option, mm-hmm. or you can commit to a queue. Then your perception is that I feel like I'm 25th. Mm-hmm. Right. So your perception is more positive if you're the 100th person to arrive, your perception is that you're in a better place if you have the multiple queue thing. But if you stay in the single queue, you're certainly in a crappy position at 100th. Right. So the perception of risk here is absolutely plays into it. And so both sides of the argument have a ton of merit. And it really just depends on transparency, the aggregate anxiety.
All right, wait, can I talk?
When and where you arrived and the risk.
So Robert, did you stay on hold through the news just to say it doesn't matter?
Well, I'm not saying it doesn't matter. I'm saying that both sides of the debate have merit, and that's why there are formal studies done on this stuff, and why would a company reorganize its call center to do single queue or to do multiple queue, or why would a McDonald's wrestle with all this stuff? Because the debate has merit. And I think companies just want to minimize the aggregate anxiety to minimize upsetting their customers.
All right. If I'm in line at TJ Maxx or Marshall's, there's a little sign that says, wait for next available cashier. And then a light bings, and they say, I'll take the next person in line.
Yes.
At the bank,
single queue.
And at the bank, maybe they should put a line there that says, wait here for next available lane. Mm-hmm. Without that line telling me what to do, I pull into a lot, and there are two ATM lanes. They're both filled up. I'm just going to pick either the left or the right and wait my turn. How is that being selfish?
No, I don't. I'm not going to characterize that as selfish. You're being efficient with space, right?
But I may not get helped quicker.
You may not. When you commit to a queue, you took a gamble. If it's single queue, there is no gamble.
You just wait your turn, and then you're next.
Exactly. There's a risk associated with that commitment.
All right. Here's a scenario. You guys can both weigh in. You can all weigh in on this. Let's say you're at a store, an unnamed store, the store, and there's six checkers. And each checker has one person that they are checking out. Wouldn't you rather be in a single line going, I'm going to get whichever those six open up, I get that one. But if you've committed, you've got a 1 in 6 chance of being the next person to be rung up.
Yeah, but there isn't, like, as Robert was explaining, if space is an issue, if there's a, you know, on a Saturday, the Jewel is very busy, or yeah. Mariano's is very busy.
Yeah.
So if you have 50 people waiting in line, as opposed to, you know, 5 people in 10 lines, people can walk around. You know what I do is I move my cart along and say, oh, they don't have a very big order. I'll pick this lane.
Yeah. Except that then what if that person who doesn't have a big order, what if they
forgot something?
Well,
or
either forgot something or it's going to a charity, so there's all kinds of paperwork so they can donate their stuff to charity.
But that's just kind of the luck of the draw then.
But wouldn't you rather not eliminate that luck of the draw?
Yeah, so when you go to the Jewel with a full card of things,
yeah.
What do you do? Do you go to a checker or do you...
Well, the one by me offers very few options. If you're in the express line, you have that thing where you wait in a single line.
That's the single queue, Bill.
Yeah,
have you learned nothing
queue.
Today?
By the way, Kevin, it's Q-U-E-U. Not, he just spelled it C-U-E. That's fine.
That confused me.
That's fine.
So, yeah, with the express, for sure.
But I would much rather, I would rather there just be a single line and I'm the next one through.
But there isn't for the big cart. So no. What do you do? Do you just pick a teller?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Not a teller at the grocery store, but yeah, a cashier.
You gotta be right, don't you?
Yeah.
All right, Robert. Well, thank you for the lesson.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
Thank you for reading stuff.
Yeah, it's a very understandable debate, in
sure.
my opinion. It's very understandable.
It is.
All right.
Thanks, Robert.
All right. Have a good night.
You
Bye-bye.
Too.
Too late. I'm not going to have a good night.
It's too late now.
Kathy wants to
Christmas
jump in.
Is ruined.
It's not ruined. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Wendy. Okay, as far as the single line goes for the grocery store, MythBusters actually did an episode on that and found that the single line where, you know, you just kind of wait in line until a cash register opens up took longer because when you're standing in line behind someone, you can put your groceries and everything on the, you know, on
the belt
there.
Yeah.
Right, right. And otherwise, there's time from where you're standing to then unloading your cart, and it actually took longer. So while it may seem to be a better way to do it, yeah, it isn't. And it's kind of the luck of the draw and how quick you are to see what new lane is going to open.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Kathy. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Bill.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks,
right.
Kathy.
MythBusters.
I'm just going to walk in the lobby from now on. I don't want to get anyone mad.
It
I just wondered if there was a particular way to do it, a
it
proper way.
It is so much fun to see that person who, even though there's a line of people, goes, I'm not playing by these rules, and just walks up whenever somebody's leaving. I've seen it happen a few times, and I'm always sure that person's going to get stabbed to death.
They should be clotheslined.
I know.
Just put your arm out.
I know.
I don't cut. That's not what
no,
I'm saying.
I know that. No, I know you don't cut.
Going to the lobby. All right, we have to take a break. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder tackling the big issues of life here on 720 WGN.
Wendy, it's been a terrible week for the Brady Bunch. Terrible 10 days, I guess. How long ago did we lose Florence Henderson? About a week and a half ago, roughly that? Well, now the youngest Brady, some say the most adorable and precocious of all the Bradys.
Baby talk. It's a wonder you can walk.
That was Mike Tyson.
That was my best Mike Tyson.
Just when like Mike Tyson.
When I try to do Mike Tyson, yeah. I can't. I got to pretend I'm doing Cindy Brady.
Susan Olsen, a.k.a. Cindy Brady, to you Brady Bunch fans, is out of a job. She got fired from her hosting job on an L.A. radio show over a homophobic rant that she sent over Facebook. I don't know if you saw what she wrote over the weekend. Not good. The Donald Trump supporter co-hosted, that's Susan Olsen, by the way, co-hosted the show Two Chicks Talking Politics, which you and I wanted to call this show, and then it was explained to us that we could not. This all before she was dismissed by the station, according to reports. Olsen used a homophobic slur over and over again, and I've read what she wrote. I can't even come close to reading this on the air. It's not good.
She deserves to be fired.
I agree with you. She used a homophobic, I can't even say
homogenized.
Homogenized slur over and over again towards an openly gay actor named Leon Accord Whiting, who decided to publish the once private message publicly. The former child star's rant followed an appearance by Accord Whiting, that's the actor I just mentioned, on the radio show and a subsequent Facebook post. he made where he accused Olson of spreading outrageous information and being dangerous and unprofessional. Olson, age 55. Cindy Brady's 55 years old, Wendy. It's
time for some new hair for Cindy, too.
Oh, yeah.
Why?
Well, she's got what Ellie Mae Clampett, the girl who played Ellie Mae, has, Donna Douglas, where they still wear their hair from when the show was on. Do you remember when you'd see Ellie Mae on a show? And you go, hey, it's not 1964 anymore. What are you doing? Susan Olson has a little bit of that going, too. Olson posted numerous statuses on Facebook addressing the controversy, noting that Trump is right and will listen. She also shared that people should be able to have different opinions. It's going to be all right, she wrote.
Yeah, you should have different opinions, but be respectful about it.
Yeah, nah. LA Talk Radio takes pride in its close and collaborative relationship with the LGBT community, the station that she just got fired from wrote. In a statement posted on Facebook, we will not tolerate hateful speech by anybody associated with our radio station and have severed our ties with a host, they don't even mention her by name, but it's her, that veered off in a direction from the one we are going. Now, I would have thought, because of her close relationship with Robert Reed, she would be more sympathetic to the cause of being gay. But if you read what she wrote, and I wish so badly I could, I can't even, she doesn't go three or four words in a row without either swearing or using a slur. And it goes on for three or four paragraphs where she just goes off. Do you remember we interviewed her at Q101 on the phone? She wasn't in studio. She was on the phone. And then a few years ago, I went to the Candy Expo at McCormick Place with Hannah and Dane, and she was just sitting at a little cardboard table. It was like the weirdest thing. There was nobody in line to see her. She was just sitting at a cardboard table. And you go, well, this is weird. That was Cindy Brady, and now she's just sitting at a cardboard table.
Well, now she's ranting and raving, but aside from the homophobic slur, she did some other language as well. And then at one point...
Oh, on Facebook?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
And then at one point, she says that her appendage that she doesn't have is bigger than yours.
Right. Not mine.
No.
The person she's ranting against.
Don't take things so personally.
How strange would that have been if she just starts ripping on me for no reason? I said hello to her when she was at a cardboard table. I was nice to her at the cardboard table. Hi, Cindy. We're going to get you out of here. That's what I said.
My junk is, larger. That's what she's saying to this guy. Yeah. And, that's just wrong.
Right.
Again, if you disagree with someone, I don't disagree with anyone on Facebook anymore. Because it starts a whole war and then your page isn't fun anymore.
Right.
I want my page to be fun.
Right. Well, you know what this means, don't you? There's going to be a family meeting in the den after dinner tonight. That's the Brady way. That's the way the Brady's handled it. If there was a problem like this, like Cindy going off on a homophobic rant, you call the troops in, you sit them down in the den.
I wish Mike Toomey was here to do as Mr. Brady.
That would be an interesting speech, wouldn't
it? Yes, it would.
Yeah, it would. All right. We'll take a break. Steve has the news, and then there's a bit more show for you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I'm too sexy for my love. Too sexy for my love. Love's going to leave.
That's the Steve Bertrand theme song. Thank you so much, Steve. And congrats to Jennifer from Grays Lake, who is actually in Elk Grove Village at the moment, but she scored a gift certificate for Baker Square. If you didn't win one, go to bakersquare.com.
Wendy, the reason we're playing this Right Said Fred classic.
Hyaluronic.
Hyaluronic acid.
God, you're mellifluous.
Oh, thank you. The reason we play this song is because there is a study published in mensfitness.com that says to guys out there, hey, if you would just try a little harder, there are some things you could do to make yourself more appealing to the opposite sex. These are surefire ways that if you would just spend a couple of minutes and do these things, women would find you irresistible.
Can't wait to hear these. Men, are you listening?
Listen up, guys. You know, especially at holiday time, you look around and you say to yourself, everybody seems to have a mate but me. What am I doing wrong? Well, after you hear these things,
a mate,
you'll say to yourself, I can be like the rest of them and have myself a girlfriend. All right.
Or a mate.
Or a mate, if you will. Here's one. Be older. And that'll happen. as time goes on.
Like quit acting like a kid?
No, they're just saying...
Because you should follow that rule.
Well, they're just saying... They use George Clooney as an example. So I would say that some women are probably older than George Clooney, but there are some that are younger. But they're saying George Clooney is one of those guys that gives... an older guy. It's hard to imagine George Clooney
being an older guy now?
According to this.
What, an 18-year-old write this?
It says, apparently women, for the most part, gravitate toward the George Clooneys of the world.
He's kind of always been an older guy, don't you think?
No.
Really?
You know, not... Like,
he was on Facts of Life.
He was on Facts of Life.
Okay.
He was. All right, but when we first became aware of him on ER... He seemed older than he was.
He seemed like 30s.
Yeah, do you think? So how old, like now, would you say he seems? He seems
60.
Does he seem 60?
Well, that's older, isn't it?
He does seem older. All right, I guess he seems older than he is. What, Kevin? You're dying to say something.
I was just going
to
say that older is relative, and I could use that in my advantage because I am currently older than I previously was.
Right, and married.
Well, yeah.
So you don't need to worry. You don't need to
worry.
That's
true.
That's what you wanted to say?
Yeah. It's relative. I could twist that around.
Right. But as guys, all right, so let's say 50 plus. Let's use that as a barometer. George Clooney would be one of your, like, if you were looking for a role model of somebody 50 plus, you'd go, well, Clooney, that's not bad.
See, older, I'm thinking Michael Douglas.
That's not older. That's old.
That's
not. How old is Michael Douglas?
Probably almost 70, right?
Oh, I think he's in his 70s, don't you think?
Yeah.
That's older.
What's old then?
He's 72. That's old.
I mean, I don't want to put.
God, you guys are.
No, it's
ageists.
Not. See, that's what we do, and it's a mistake. It's not a judgment.
Right.
But he's not young. He's not middle-aged. He's old.
Yeah.
He's 70. If you're 70, you're glorious, you're wonderful, you're experienced, and you're old. You just are. And if you're two, you're young.
Clooney's 55, and that's older.
Clooney's 55. So
what, 55 is older?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
You guys?
You don't think it is?
You didn't... I'm...
What did he Kevin, just do? Kevin just cut
I gotta, just I put his finger over his own mouth. And
I turned my mic off.
He gave himself that librarian look with
He's
the finger.
Like, you guys are 50. And then he just.
Yeah. Well, I got a look from you, so my mic went off.
That's a good producer right there. Edits himself.
Yep.
Come on, Wendy, you're over half done. Right?
That's the nicest way of saying it.
You are the sweetest guy in the world. Yeah, I don't want to think about that. Half done.
It's better than half baked.
All right.
I'd rather be that.
In my opinion,
be both.
There's a couple of guys. Cary Grant's a perfect example. Cary Grant.
He's dead.
He's dead now. And that's so, that's sad. I'd rather not be dead. But, like, Cary Grant was just all kinds of cool, whether he was young or old, and he aged so great. All right. So what they're saying here at Men's Fitness is choose a guy that's older.
But I thought these are things that you need to do. So how do you be older if you're not?
Well.
Dress in old man's clothes?
No.
Just wait a little bit.
It goes back to George Clooney. George Clooney always behaved more maturely.
Yeah.
So quit acting like a baby.
Right.
Act like George Clooney.
That's what they're saying.
Salt and pepper your hair.
Right.
John has the definition of being old. John, help us out here.
Hi. Somebody once told me that the definition of being of old is 15 years older than you currently are.
Oh, that's true.
So if you're 45, 60 is old. If you're 60, 75 is old.
Right. Just keep moving it. As you get older, move it up 15 years.
Yeah.
I love it. All right. That'll work. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
That makes you definitely old in Kevin's book, Wendy.
Yeah.
I don't care anymore.
It's not true.
Your Christmas present is getting returned, Kev. 847s, women are not attracted to George Clooney because he's older. They're attracted to him because it's George Clooney.
Yeah, he's, all right. He's attractive. He's a talented guy.
Have you seen the commercial going around Facebook for a Norwegian, I don't know what it's for. It's a Norwegian company for something. It's not doing its trick because I don't remember what it's for. But this woman wakes up. And she's looking around, and she's in a beautiful hotel room. And then all of a sudden, George Clooney walks in and says, oh, would you like some breakfast? And kind of, you know, rubs her shoulders. And she's like, what? Hmm. And it's like, I can't remember. I'll find out what it's for. But he looks really good.
He's in a commercial for that?
Yeah.
Well, he's in that one with Danny DeVito, too, and I don't know what that's for. They're just, they're getting fitted for suits, then they're drinking coffee, then there's
that's
Roman
Centurions.
That's not a
commercial. That's our new reality show.
I have no idea what that commercial's for, but they're just, it's him and Danny DeVito just going out and doing stuff.
Are they friends?
I think. I hope they are.
Are they twins?
No, they're not twins. No. All right, so that's the first thing you can do to make yourself more attractive. Be George Clooney.
All right, it's a, by the way, George Clooney is in a Norwegian bank commercial. And
a bank in Norway, or do we have those here in Chicago?
I don't think we have them here.
Is he in the drive up at all?
Don't, Steve, don't.
Just asking.
No, but it's just she wakes up and it's like life isn't always as it seems. I don't know the tagline. But he, this woman just wakes up and realizes, oh my God, I guess I'm married to George Clooney, and it's like things aren't what they appear to be, or something like that.
All right, I'll buy.
It's not
some
doing
of that.
Its job because
no,
I can't
we don't
remember.
Know what it is. No. All right, so that's number one. Be older. Number two. And now I hate this phrase, but they put it here in Men's Fitness, so I will say the phrase and then I'll condemn the phrase after. Rock yourself some facial hair. I don't like, if you're on the internet every day, somebody's rocking something. It just means they're wearing it well. But they suggest if you're a guy and you want to be more attractive to women, facial hair might be the answer. It says, let's be clear, when we say facial hair, we mean stubble and full beards. Mustaches will never be panty droppers. Can I say that? No.
I've never heard you say anything like
it's
that.
It's written down here.
I know,
make it
but
up.
That just sounds.
But according to research published in the Journal of Evolutionary Biology, how you style your facial fuzz can make you more attractive to women, depending on what they want. But doesn't it come down to this? If you're a woman that likes facial hair, yeah, that's going to work. But if you're a woman that doesn't, it will work against you.
Ro has started with the facial stubble.
Right.
It's very in right now.
It is. My husband's been doing
the
it for
CLTV
the last...
people forced him. He didn't want to do it. CLTV said that's the only way we'll take you. They've got standards at CLTV, Wendy.
My husband started doing that stubble maybe about 5 years ago, and I do like it to look at, but it...
And it burns.
It itches.
I know. Here's another idea, fellas. If you're looking for something that'll make the ladies swoon, be a distance runner.
That is not going to do it for me. What? I mean, why?
Well, they suggest that if you're a distance runner, you're going to be in great shape, and then they talk about the benefits of that. But
sting benefits?
Yeah, they hint at that a little bit. Yeah.
So why does it have to be a long-distance runner? Can it be just somebody who works out on a regular basis?
I think so. Yeah, I think you could say that. But they've chosen distance running as the thing.
What, Kevin?
You're attacking me. I'm not going to say it.
Say it.
Actually, I didn't really have much, but long-distance running, that makes me... whine and like that does that makes me very unattractive, I think.
Because why?
But just the aches and the pains from it. No, because when I do it, I get like IT bandage and it hurts a lot and I get whiny and fussy.
So
that's not attractive.
If you're a short Kevin, don't
runner.
Do it.
Right.
Be a sprinter.
Yeah, be a sprinter.
What about a hurdler?
It doesn't say anything about hurdlers, and there's no mention of the shot put whatsoever in here. All right, we've got more of these. Guys, if you want to be more attractive to the women, trust me, this is from Men's Fitness Magazine. These will work. These are things that you probably hadn't thought of.
Sounds like a bunch of garbage. Can
Come
I
on.
Tell you that?
All right, more ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Over at mensfitness.com, they put together a bunch of things that if you're a guy, you want to do these things because then women will find you irresistible.
You need to pay attention, men. You need to act older and you need to grow some facial hair and start long distance running. See, it doesn't sound stupid when I repeat it back to you.
Be older, facial hair, long distance running. These are the first three steps. You might want to try this one too. I don't know about this one. It says, if you're a guy, you should be more brooding. Do you believe that? Do you go for a guy that just looks brooding all the time? That's like a soap opera thing. If you're on a soap opera, yes. But if you're in real life, I don't think so.
Brooding to me would be like maybe he needs some healthy Trinity. Is he constipated?
It doesn't say that here, but yeah.
I don't want brooding. Why do you want someone who's brooding? Don't you want a fun guy and I don't mean a mushroom?
Right. I think it's a romantic image to find that brooding guy. But
well,
I think
to look
in real
at,
life,
but not to have a relationship with,
like a mope.
Exactly. Right?
There's a fine line between brooding and mopery. If you can find that line, you're fine. But if not, you're just a mope. This one I agree with. I like this one. Be more charitable. I think a woman would appreciate that in a guy. A guy,
yes.
Who's, right? That for
yeah,
some
give
reason,
back.
Women buy, yeah, they like that. I also think women, it doesn't say that on here, but I also think if you have a dog, I think women like that for some reason. I always see guys walking around with dogs, and I think to myself, that's like a golden ticket. Look at women are coming out of the woodwork to talk about that guy's dog.
That's the only way I could think of you getting a dog if you hadn't met Terry.
You'd
borrow a dog, wouldn't
no,
you?
No, I would rather be without...
Be alone forever?
I would rather be brooding by myself.
A mope.
I'd be a mope without a dog. But you've seen that,
it's
right?
It's a chick magnet.
Guy walking around a street and he's got a dog.
Because a girl goes, oh my God, can I pet your dog?
Yeah.
Well, yes, you can.
Yep.
Got something else for you, too.
That's sick, but yeah. What about this one? Be musically talented.
That is, oh my God,
guy
yes.
with a guitar? Never fails.
Come on, we've talked about this. Iggy Pop looks good on stage.
It's crazy, isn't it? So they suggest you learn a musical instrument.
But learn it. Don't just pose. And Guitar Hero does not count.
No, that doesn't count. You have to actually play the guitar. And if I can combine this with number four, write yourself some brooding music. Talk about how things are misty and unfair. I think you'll fare well. It says be risky in a good way. A University of Alaska at Anchorage study suggests that you should take more hunter-gatherer risks, like handling a fire or dangerous animals. What?
You know what,
guys? I'd kill myself.
Stay single.
I would be on fire and a wolverine would be biting me.
I mean, yeah, that because you want, a girl wants to go, oh, my hero, just
yeah.
like Nell did with Dudley Do-Right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, seriously, you got to.
That's dangerous.
Some of you shouldn't do that.
No.
You're one of them.
Most of us should not do that. It says we're not suggesting that you seek out these experiences, like handling a fire or dangerous animals, but rather do your part should you end up in such a situation.
Well, no kidding. If you're a decent guy to be with, you would hopefully protect us.
Right.
Do you think like jamming or like unjamming a quarter out of the vacuum cleaner counts?
Yeah.
I did that recently.
Yeah, Kevin, that one counts.
All right.
Yeah. Any scars? Do you have any scars?
No, it took a couple hours, though.
Screwdriver?
A lot of tools, yeah.
Yeah, you had to take it apart and get the quarter out. That counts, but that's not really danger.
Well, it could have, like, you know, exhausted in my face
or
something.
Tell me if you think this is a real one or not. Now, again, this is according to Men's Fitness, so there's some margin of error. They suggest that you develop yourself what they call a bit of a dad bod.
I don't know.
That's not true. Women would like a guy who's cut, not a guy who's got some flab.
A dad bod doesn't necessarily mean flab.
It doesn't mean flab, but it just means...
It means you're not John Cena.
Right.
Who, by the way, was really funny on SNL, which I can't believe I'm saying.
Yeah, he was fine. He was all right.
He did an okay job, but someone like that, I can't speak for every girl, but that's... A lot.
Did that work for you? For people who don't know, John Cena was a wrestler and now he's an actor. And he was the host of Saturday Night Live. Yeah.
He's not still wrestling?
No. He does both.
Oh, okay.
He does both. But he's been in, he was in Amy Schumer's movie. He was her first boyfriend in that.
He was pretty funny in that, actually.
Yeah, he was. But he's just muscle on top of muscle on top of muscle. And when there was a scene where he pulled his sleeves off on Saturday Night Live and one of my daughters was watching. She goes, oh. Like that made her sick to see a guy like that. Nice.
That's,
yes, you're right.
But that's what I'm saying. A dad bod as opposed to that. A dad bod isn't fat.
It's not fat, but it's like slightly out of proportion.
No.
You don't think so? What is it then?
It's somebody who's a dad and middle-aged.
Doesn't that mean slightly out of proportion for most guys?
No.
You don't think so? I don't know. When I think of it, it's a guy who maybe had his prime body 5, 10, 15 years ago and now is settled in a little bit. You don't think so? You think that's not it?
I don't think it means overweight. I just think it means not somebody who's ripped anymore.
Right.
But then I think ripped and I think John Cena. So
yeah.
There's a happy medium.
Yeah. Here's one more. For guys who need a woman, they need it quick. It says, put on some deodorant. Don't you think a guy has thought of that? Put on some deodorant?
I was doing so well until this point.
That's what I mean, that should be for my 14-year-old kid.
Yeah.
Why is a man being told to put deodorant on?
It says it's a complicated dating world. Something as simple as swiping on some antiperspirant can make you more alluring to a woman.
Who doesn't think of that, like, when you get up in the morning?
Every day.
Who doesn't?
Every day.
If you have to have this be told to you and you're reading Men's Fitness, right. Good luck.
Who's reading this going, you know, I hadn't really entertained the idea of
as
some
I'm
deodorant.
Doing curls, reading this. Oh, deodorant.
But I know a friend of mine has some Arid Extra Dry. Maybe I'll borrow some. I have it at the house, and then I've got an emergency one in my drawer just in case.
At work?
I have one just in case. Because haven't there been days where you go, I think I did, but just in case, I need a backup.
I don't leave the house without putting deodorant on and brushing my teeth.
Ideally, but haven't you ever had a day where you go, I can't remember if I did or didn't? If you keep some in your drawer at work, it alleviates the problem. Because you just go, all right, well, when I get to work, I'll settle up.
Girls have a routine, and they have so much to do with makeup and hair and everything that I don't think I've ever forgotten.
Yeah.
And if I do that, I'll just suck it up for the rest of the day.
Sure.
And won't stand close to you.
So that's it, guys. Get older, start running, be more brooding, and certainly, by all means, try the deodorant, see what happens. We'll take a quick break.
Many a life.
I think we just saved some lives. We'll see what Ronan have next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.